let's start the show.
It's January 5th, 2012. 2012.
Whoa! First podcast of the year.
Yeah, this is the first podcast of the year. Let's play the song. Welcome to This Is Only a Test.
Whiffing intros.
I'm Will Smith. Never go off script. That's the lesson, Chan. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing fine.
Doing fine?
Yeah.
Do you miss driving the sound?
Absolutely.
We can make that happen.
The power was so
it's rewarding. Isn't it nice?
Oh.
I mean, the thing is, it's all in your hands. The thrill of victory, the agony of defeat.
I want to say the last podcast of 2011 was probably our best podcast that month.
It was definitely our best podcast. Gary Whitta, of course, is here. How are you doing, Gary?
Thank you. Good. I want to say Norm, I thought, did a great
bang
job
up
hosting.
Job. Yeah, yeah, bang up job.
And you know, look at the forums and the chat. A lot of people seem to agree that Norm was good at hosting.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
I think that you guys were really dicks, frankly.
I think
so.
It really helped that you were on a computer monitor.
You're easy to ignore.
Making a fool of yourself. Easy to ignore, but also not so easy to ignore with those hats and cat
virtual hats.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about the whole telepresence thing. If we ever do that again, we should really like have it on a bigger screen so that it feels like you're kind of really virtually there.
We should do what they did with Video Vinny on the Game of the Year stuff for Bomb.
Yeah.
I mean, that was entertaining and ridiculous.
And by the way, those Giant Bomb Game of the Year videos are fantastic. Norm introduced me to them, and I just think they're amazing.
I wish we could get that kind of production value on tested videos.
Yeah,
maybe one day.
You got to become a priority.
I know. So we're here. This is the first podcast of the year. Welcome to 20. Does it feel like we're in the future? Do you feel like you live in the future, Gary?
I still want to say next year. No, next year I'm going to do this, but it's really this year.
I always feel like I'm living in the future.
Every day.
Yeah.
Plane in the sky with the chair and
all that.
Yeah. This is the last show before CES. This is the first of the year.
Episode
last CES.
99.
Yeah.
So it's a very auspicious way to start the year, straight into the big tech show, all the big news. But we don't really know what the story of CES is going to be yet, right? We kind of think there'll be a lot of 3D stuff, but beyond that.
I think the story of CES is that this is going to be the last CES. I think that was
a very bold prediction that you made.
I think the era of the big trade show. I think Microsoft bailing out. There's two ways that can go. Either that means that CES is waning, and it'll probably won't be the last one. It'll probably be 4 or 5 years before it actually fully implodes.
Mm.
Or it could be that Microsoft's waning. I'm not sure which is the thing. Which is the right answer?
Well, which is it? Is it the last CES, which is the bold prediction you're making, or is it just on the decline?
I think that this is the last big one. When I say it's the last CES, I mean it's the last.
Do you think you'll kind of go into that mode where like E3 was a few years ago, where they retreated and made it much smaller, but then it came back again?
I don't think they'll do that. Well, even when it came back, it's still not the same as it was before.
If we're in a good way,
yeah, in a good way,
in a very good way.
I think the thing that's bad about CES is the purchasing cycles, which is ostensibly what the show is for, to let buyers for Best Buy and small electronics shops and all that stuff know what they should be buying for the next year, is really out of sync with when this stupid thing in January happens, because they've already bought all the stuff that they bought. They're running through – the new products aren't going to be out for 6 or 7 months. So it adds all this anticipation. And I think it probably – if somebody looked at it, would probably say that it hurts their sales in the first part of the year, because it just tells everybody, oh, hey, don't buy anything now. Wait.
Right. But it's been like that for the past couple of years.
It's been like that forever.
Well, yeah, forever. You know, TV makers and TV, those are the big consumer products typically at CES, taking up most of Central Hall, North Hall. Announced in January, come out in June, July, and people buy them anyway.
Well, yeah, but it also means that people don't buy
– early adopters buy them in June, July, and then come November, you know, Black Friday, that's when everyone buys last year's model.
Well, and then the post-Christmas deals. This year, the big story for me was the post-Christmas deals were amazing. I mean, there was stuff between Christmas and New Year's that was made Black Friday look like a pauper's holiday.
I wasn't really shopping for tech deals over the holiday. What sort of stuff was it?
I mean, they were just incredibly cheap TVs. Like the high-end Panasonic plasmas and the Samsung plasmas were all significantly sold up. I bought some Pumas. Puma had a good sale.
Oh, so not just tech, but all over.
Yeah, I bought.
I actually went. I went and did a little bit of clothes shopping over the holidays, and everything's on sale. It's fantastic.
Oh, great year for clothes shopping.
Yeah.
The one thing that's good about this whole weird CS cycle is that it does mean that there's good deals to be had in the first part of the year if you're a savvy shopper.
Well, and also because they always do the good TV deals in the run up to the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Yeah, so but even post Super Bowl, there's another it's season after season of tech bounty, and I think the way that the holiday sales worked out this year, probably that's going to continue.
Given I'm a little bit depressed that 3D is probably going to be one of the big things. You know, none of us are really that excited about 3D, but at the same time, I want to be optimistic. I'm kind of hopeful that maybe someone there will have some kind of, you know, evolution in the 3D technology that actually is interesting.
The evolution, the next step really, you know, glass-less 3D.
Right. Well, I think we're going to see a wave of passive.
At least passive, which is one step
towards... I thought passive was last year.
No, passive... Last year, remember, they were trying to sell us as active as being the good thing.
No, last year was passive as being the good thing. Vizio and LG.
Passive was really the cheap thing.
Cheap, but still good. Not double resolution yet, but again, we realize that double resolution thing with DisplayMate's testing really doesn't matter all that much.
Yeah, it turns out.
Or half resolution.
I think we all agree that like glassless is what it's going to take to really, really get there, but we're not – I don't think we're there yet. Hopefully we'll see – I don't know. Just it's not going to be a revolutionary thing. I'm just hoping that we'll see some 3D stuff that is like, oh, actually, this is pretty good.
And the word actually is very important there. Last year and the years before, I think we could argue 3D was a darling at CES.
Yeah.
Manufacturers were genuinely excited.
Yeah. If not customers.
This year, more of a recovery. More of a salvaging a technology that they've definitely taken
their lumps in the court of public opinion and in the media. There is kind of a generally, I think, anti 3D attitude out there right now in the media and especially with the public.
Everywhere. Yeah,
and so the industry has really got its work cut out, and the way to do that is not by forcing it down our throats. It's by providing better content and better technology. They've just got to make the offering better and we'll like it.
And I don't think any of the big TV makers are going to drop it and go a completely different direction anytime soon and say, we realize 3D isn't going anywhere and here are some nice 2K TVs.
Well, it's not difficult to identify what the stumbling blocks are. It's expensive, that inevitably comes down on its own. Nobody really likes wearing the clunky glasses that you have to charge
up.
You know, it's one thing to wear the silly ones at the theater, but the next level kind of Geordie LaForge visors you have to wear at home are kind of annoying.
Yeah.
Like you said, we're already seeing some companies like LG are offering the passive glasses that are actually pretty good. It's more like the cinema experience.
How about this?
The biggest problem that I have is still it makes the image too dark. They need to find a way to make the glasses in some way less opaque.
It's still uncomfortable though. I mean, no matter what you do,
it's just not a good experience.
Well, with the active glasses, the glasses are heavy. You kind of go cross-eyed after a while.
In the ideal like hardware scenario where we have a sharp, bright, passive 3D TV.
In a way that doesn't require you to completely darken the room and backlight the TV.
And with a decent CG movie that's, you know, or a movie that's shot in 3D.
Yeah.
Right.
Is that something that you think consumers still want?
No.
I think they're still open minded. Again, if you can make it better and cheaper and have a wide variety of content out there, I don't think people are ideologically opposed to it. They just don't like what's being given to them right now, which is not great technology, very limited content, and very high price. I mean, what in any of that is attractive to a customer right now?
No, it's horrible. The thing is, this is something that always happens at CES. There's always kind of an it technology. You know, in 2000, it was MP3 players, and then the iPod came out, and MP3 players became irrelevant, right?
Right.
In 2003, ebook readers were a hugely popular. 2003, 2004, you saw tons of ebook readers. Nobody knew what to do with them because you couldn't get books anywhere.
Right.
And then Amazon came out with the Kindle. Barnes & Noble came out with the Nook. Sony came out with their store. And that changed that market dramatically.
And again, opening the gateway to the content was the key.
Right. I think that that's the big gap. I think that that's the 3D is a technology without a purpose or really much content worth speaking of. I mean, the good news is that the stuff that's out there, your Trons and your Toy Story 3s and your Cars 2 – well, maybe not Cars 2, but – you know, a lot of those movies are good.
Yeah.
There's also a lot of crap that's been shoveled down that pipe as well in the Clash of the Titans Green Hornet mold. So, I mean,
you know, I'm perfectly okay with 3D content in terms of like 3D movies sticking only to theater and improving the theater experience, getting more people actually to pay to go to theaters and not having that at home.
But I'm not interested in, like, if there's a choice between a 3D movie and a 2D movie of the same version, almost always do I go to the 2D movie. The exceptions are stuff like Harold and Kumar and
what if it's like a movie like Hugo where –
And Hugo, yeah. Right. I would go see Hugo.
I want to see that in 3D, but I don't need to see that – like or Coraline. I'll watch that in 3D in theater, but I don't need to see that in 3D when I watch it again at home.
I absolutely agree. So,
yeah.
And the, there are some movies where you kind of feel like, what the hell? It's all part of the fun. Like Harold and Kumar is a good example of that. I noticed just now, just recently, that like Final Destination 5 is now on demand. And the Comcast ad says, you know, also available in 3D. And I'm thinking, well, shit, I bought the TV. I may, you know, let's try the I want to
So you're buying the discs?
No, I haven't been buying any discs.
Okay.
I'm saying that on demand is now, you know, like Xfinity has a whole 3D section. And they're saying, you know, they do those ads now available on demand, Final Destination 5. And it says also available in 3D. You can go to the 3D section, dial up the 3D version of the movie. And I want to be open-minded. I want to keep, you know, trying and giving them every option to succeed. You know, I think it's going to take like a 3D section on Netflix. And again, just opening the gateways to the content. Because eventually they are going to be able to force the TVs in people's homes in the same way that you can't buy a non-HD TV anymore.
Right.
Basically.
No, you can't, I don't think.
And, well, I mean, I can't. I mean, I think you can if, like, the little tiny ones you put in the kitchen.
Okay, yeah.
Little tube TVs. But, like, in terms of a living room TV, it's all HD now. I think eventually it's going to be 3D. You're not going to be able to buy a TV that doesn't come with a pair of 3D glasses. So they can get the TV in people's homes, but then they've got to give them something to watch.
Absolutely.
I think that while 3D will still be a big presence at CES, I think what we saw last year with stupid apps being on TV being – that was the trend last year. I think manufacturers are going to double down this year on that.
Which is very dangerous when you consider that nobody really knows what Apple's doing yet.
Well, I think that's exactly why they want to do it. They want to get in – this is their last chance to do something before Apple comes out with their presumably app-based TV platform. And takes away all market share.
It's interesting you mention that. The problem with the first gen and we all have TVs that have these first gen app interfaces.
Yeah.
Is that there's no unified platform. I mean, there is kind of a unified platform because they all use JavaScript and HTML5 for the apps, but it's basically like 25 different app stores for each of the manufacturer. Each manufacturer has their own store, or if they even have a store. And it's their own platform. What's starting to happen, what I think we're going to see this year is we're going to see people licensing Roku, licensing Plex. I guess you don't have to license Plex, licensing Boxy, stuff like that, and using that on, as their app interface for TVs as the hardware that's in the TVs.
But again, it's still a dumb idea. Why would you want to buy the hardware that is bundled in with the massive big screen when you can just attach whatever hockey puck you want to it and have whatever kind of experience you want?
Or, because that experience typically has sucked, i.e., Google TV.
Yeah, but Apple TV or and Roku WGTV and those experiences are pretty good.
My problem with apps isn't just the unified platform, and that is a big problem. It's that the mechanism for apps is replacing whatever content you have with the app. Same thing with Xbox Live. The apps category, like when you run Netflix or you run ESPN, it is – you think of it, it's not a window. It's a full app as opposed to an overlay.
And the new TV content apps on Xbox are showing that's you know, how it's going to be. You download the ones, the channels basically that you want.
Yeah. I would rather have apps be overlays over existing content and have more information. So place that lower thirds.
I can see that.
The other big thing at CES surely has to be a new round of tablets, right? I mean, there has to be another generation of – everyone's still trying to break that market, get some of Apple's market share. There's got to be a new round
We'll see a lot of Android tablets. I think we'll probably see some Windows 8 Slate prototypes.
So when we're talking about tablets, we're talking about moving into PC space, right? It'll be tablets, like Android tablets. I think a few of those, mostly manufacturers – maybe announcing their ice cream sandwich tablets finally.
Mm.
And then we're going to see Windows 8 tablets, and then we're going to see Ultrabooks.
I think Windows 8 tablets are much more interesting than Android tablets.
With TVs being less exciting this year, I think it's a good opportunity. It's going to be Windows 8. It's like 3 years ago, I believe, when Windows 7 was the big thing at CES, when the beta came out that night after Ballmer's keynote. I think we're going to see that at CES this year.
What Windows I would like tablets. To see from the Android...
Yeah.
We've seen Windows tablets at CES, I think the last 3 years, at least the last 2 years, and no products ever came with any of them.
Tablets were never a part of Windows before, and tablets are all of Windows.
No, hold on. We're going to add touch interface and tablet stuff to Windows 7.
Touch interface is not the same as we design this OS basically.
Yeah, to be fair, the Windows 7 the tablet being touch stuff was kind of half-assed. No, but Windows 8 isn't half-assed, though. It doesn't seem to be that way. Like, it's as much a tablet product as it is a desktop product.
No, it seems like it's more of a tablet product than it is
more,
a desktop
right,
product.
Yeah. Terrific.
So it's half-assed the wrong way.
I don't think
correct
it's the wrong
for
way.
A Windows product. Yes,
it's only the wrong way if you don't believe that tablet computing is a huge part of the future.
But you have a massive install. Well, we'll talk about this later. This is. Let's wait until we see what they're actually going to talk about. And
I was just going to say the other thing that I think the Android, because ICS is obviously is very compelling. The thing that I think the Android tablet market, which has been very boring and stagnant in the last all its iteration so far,
yeah.
is some kind. I think it needs. It's lacking what the phone side has, which is like a Google Nexus. Flagship device, like a Nexus tablet.
There are rumors about that, and we'll get to news about that. But I think we won't see a Google Nexus tablet at CES this year.
No, because if they do that, then it's going to stifle everybody else.
Yeah,
nobody else wants the other. They need the massive vendor base in order for that to work.
But it didn't. But it didn't stifle the growth on the phone side. There was a Nexus phone very early on.
It's a little different situation, though. I think.
How so?
I think that tablets. I think the tablet is. Because the Nexus phones were, especially on that first generation, limited in carrier and band support. And they weren't – remember, the Nexus One was a phone you couldn't buy on contract. So if you wanted a Nexus One, you had to pay $600 for it, $500 for it straight from Google.
Right.
And I think that allowed
– They're never going to do that
again. That was not competitive enough. That was safe.
But what's happening – right? What we're seeing right now is that the window – out of the gate, the Android tablet scene – in terms of hardware and adoption, is not really exploding the way that it has on the phone side. So it needs some kind of shot in the arm. It just needs one good tablet.
And you know, market and competition aside, Google released these Nexus phones to say this is what an Android phone could be. This is what Android phones should aspire to be.
Right, and that's exactly what the tablet side needs now.
And the Zoom was not that because Google, before they bought Motorola,
that hasn't completed yet.
Right, before they
announced intention.
Right, they had less control over the Motorola Zoom. It was more Motorola built the hardware and used Honeycomb.
Unsexied
it
up.
I'm gonna bolt a prediction onto my stuff from last week when we did 2012 predictions. I think that in 2012 we will see. A Google Nexus tablet
because I agree, I think
it's a no-brainer.
I agree with Gary. So the news with that is that DigiTimes reported that Eric Schmidt had previously said they were going to do a tablet, whether it would be a Nexus tablet. They
so
would make
it
a great
Google
tablet.
IO,
a great,
right?
And I think it'll be a Google I.O. And DigiTimes says it's actually going to be a Kindle Fire competitor rather than an iPad competitor.
I think that's right.
Because the best Android tablet right now, best selling Android tablet has been the Kindle Fire.
Right.
By far.
The only selling tablet.
And it's the one that Google
which, again,
has,
is only really an Android tablet technically.
Technically, because it runs
the
kernel.
It's the least Android-y of Android tablets. Yeah. All it has in common is the jank.
Yeah. And also the cheapest and also the one with the best branding.
Yes.
So, I mean, we understand all the reasons.
And there are a lot of arguments saying that this idea is crazy, that Google could not make and sell a tablet to compete with the Fire. Because to compete with the Fire, you have to compete with that price point, you know, under $300, approaching $200. And I don't think Google – there's no business sense for them to sell that tablet, a tablet like that at a loss.
See, I don't think that you have to be competing with the Kindle. I think that everyone is still really competing with the iPad. And in that sense, unless we see a big change in the Apple strategy, you know, with the next round of iPads, which, you know, presumably we'll be hearing about very soon, you don't have to worry about being price competitive with the Kindle because the Kindle is kind of an outlier. It's super cheap. It's not a true Android tablet. It's really just a portal to the Amazon ecosystem. To compete with the iPad, which is a true tablet, all you got to do is come in under $500, which is not that it can't be that difficult.
I don't think Android tablets are going to do
that. I think they will, but do you think that's based on the argument that iPads are going to be $500? iPad's
going to be $500.
I think like a 7-inch ICS Google Nexus tablet at like $299. So more expensive than the Kindle Fire, but we understand why, because it's a better product. It's a more universal product.
But what if,
and still significantly cheaper than the iPad. I think that could be very compelling.
What if, with the next iPad being announced sometime, we hope in Q1, all they do is reduce, like they did with the 3GS and the 4 on the iPhone line, reduce the price of the iPad 2 now that supply chain is optimized.
Well, and that's...
And make it a $300 iPad 2.
And that's exactly what Apple should do.
And a $500-$600 iPad 3.
It's the same model as the – Apple owns the high end, and they're not going to cede the high ground anytime soon.
Yes.
Where they are vulnerable is at the low end.
Yeah.
And so the way to protect that low end is bring in the iPad 3 at the top end, have that be the new premium product, and have the iPad 2 basically be the new 3GS, which you can lower in price.
As opposed to going into the 7-inch tablet market,
and throttle any competition at the lower price end.
The mistake you guys are making is you're thinking about phones and tablets as if they're the same. Remember when Apple sells a free iPhone 4 or $99 iPhone 4, it's attached to a massive data plan that lasts for 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, the iPhone 4 actually, they're making $700 on that phone, and
he's selling it for $0.
He's selling it for $99 because AT&T pays for that.
The model to look at is iPod Touch, because if you look at iPod Touch, you know they sell a massive number of iPod Touches. There's no Android analog, and this is something I've been thinking about a lot lately.
But, so they're cheaper versions than Nano.
I'm wondering why there's no phoneless phone for Android.
Because
I mean, the Galaxy Tab Player
I understand that the phones are subsidized,
but I'm not even really comparing the two. What I'm saying is that iPad 2 now, which has been out for, a year?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At $499, by the time they introduce the iPad 3, I've got to believe that the last generation components, the A5 and the stuff that's in the iPad 2, they're going to get a point where they can start dropping the price to protect themselves.
If they want. I don't think they want to.
Exactly, because Will says Apple cares more about profits. Apple sells hardware to make money, and they don't care about that.
But it's not even necessarily about protecting themselves against lower price competitors, because like I said, there still isn't a viable one outside of the Kindle.
It's about expanding
the market. I think it's more about opening up the doorway to the Apple ecosystem, the iOS world, to people that are prohibited from it now because $500 is just too expensive.
Well, I completely agree that Apple sells products to make money.
And for the high end. They don't participate in the bottom.
Agreed. I think the iPad 3 will still be the high end. It will be highly coveted. It will sell extremely well, but limited quantities because it will be expensive to make and supply chain won't be great for that yet. I think that they're going to reduce the price of the iPad 2.
Did you disagree with both of us?
Philosophically, I agree with you, Will.
That's like dividing by zero.
1% Norm should be a politician.
In reality, I think
he's like Mitt Romney, just changing his position every 2 seconds.
No politics. Let's talk about set-top boxes. Shift gears.
Still Apple.
Shift gears.
We're still talking about Apple.
Roku Stick.
Okay.
The Roku announced a new product this week. It's a Roku box, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But instead of being a box, it's a little thing about 2-3 inches long.
Yeah.
Plugs into an HDMI port on the back of your TV.
That's a great idea.
It has to be an MHT, which means it provides power and has a two-way kind of remote control connection. So,
okay. But you can plug it right in because a lot of TVs, obviously, they have HDMI ports now. You plug it right in there.
The MHT HDMI ports are more limited. Like, I think our TVs probably have them.
Okay, just on newer TVs?
It's going to be a newer TV. But the nice thing about that is you don't have a remote with it. So you use the remote that comes with your TV and it just passes straight through to that device.
Oh, right, because I was going to say, like, a lot of the times you think it's going to be around the back of the TV. You wouldn't have line of sight for a remote.
Right, so this is the way
– MHT, yeah.
Yeah, this is the way that it's essentially – this is the way they're going to integrate Roku in a lot of TVs.
Yeah, because I've noticed that HDMI is actually controlling a lot of devices that I've got plugged into. When I use my Harmony to switch stuff over, like to the PlayStation – the PlayStation won't actually turn on or the Xbox won't start up until the HDMI –
cable
it's hooked in really kind of gives it permission to.
Oh, that's weird. Mine doesn't do that. But I think Samsung – you have a Panasonic too.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I just have it turned on.
Yeah, I don't know.
Crazy. So that's coming. It's unclear to me exactly what that hardware is capable of. I've been saying MHT, haven't I? Yeah. MHL.
There's a wireless –
Wi-Fi in the stick.
Right.
So basically you connect it to your Wi-Fi network, you plug it into the HDMI port, you connect it to Wi-Fi,
right,
and then it's just a normal Roku. Now, I have some questions about that because I know that there's the lower power Roku solutions seem to be kind of underperforming and a little bit laggy, slow, difficult to use.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we'll get one of those in and test it out. I'm interested to see.
And also, it precludes a wired connection for streaming the media, which is all ideal. I mean, I know that's not what most people do, but the hardcore guys like us that don't want to be at the mercy of Wi-Fi lag or anything are always going to run a cable.
But your Wi-Fi connection is always going to be significantly – for most users, if you have an N network, your Wi-Fi connection is going to be significantly faster than your connection from the house to the world. The bottleneck is your Comcast connection or your DSL or whatever.
Then why is it when I do a test and I stream media wirelessly and then stream it over a wired connection, the wired connection's always
There is packet loss. Like, there's inherently more packet loss with a wireless connection than there is with a wired.
And again, this is something that's going to go away. We're hearing about, like, gigabit Wi-Fi is coming.
So we can talk. That's on the list.
All right. Well, very good.
It's a perfect segue, Gary.
Yeah.
I think a Roku in that form factor is definitely interesting and appealing. I think there's a lot of people in the consumer space, when they go to a store and they pay $50 to $100 for a set-top box, they're expecting in their mind, cognitively, something more substantial than a stick. As amazing as that stick could be, I think people are going to be skeptical about what it can do.
I think
it's nice though. No wires, no additional power supply. Yeah. It's not a power strip. It's a very neat solution.
Yeah.
I don't think people are mentally ready for it yet.
Now that said, I went last night to we had a loss here at Whiskey Media late last year and lost our Apple TV has disappeared.
Huh.
The one that we use for App of the Day. So I went to buy a new one yesterday. And it is surprisingly hard to find set-top boxes at Best Buy. Surprisingly hard. Like, for a product that they were
pushing
Roku
or an Apple
really
TV.
Hard this year, I went to the TV section. I'm expecting to see, like, Roku and
at least a
Google
counter,
TV
right?
and Boxy, like, on a shelf someplace with maybe a little bit of signage somewhere. I couldn't find them. I had to ask. I mean, I never have to ask. And then when I get there, the Roku and the Boxy are there, and the WDTV Lives and all those kind of the things that are mainly for people who pirate content and stream it inside their house – we're all in one place, but there's no Apple TV there.
But the Apple TV should not have been difficult to find because Best Buy's usually have their own Apple section.
Well,
don't
but I would think that the Apple stuff would be that the Apple TV would be with the streaming boxes.
See, I think it would be
Apple
with the
stuff.
Apple section. Yeah,
yeah, but it was in the Apple section.
But no, you're right. Best Buy's are not well organized these days. Best Buy's these days are like puzzles in Uncharted. Well, like you got to line all the mirrors up just the right way to open the door.
Yeah, we have a
choose
your own adventure
to.
Moment in the podcast right now.
Yeah, we could go two ways.
Would you want to talk about Best Buy?
Or do we want to talk about
wireless?
I'm happy to go with whatever.
I'm
going to
put my thumb.
Let's go with Best Buy
on the gigabit wireless.
It's always
page,
fun to talk about Best Buy,
and let's open up to chapter 11, and talk about Best Buy.
You have if we choose Best Buy, I'd be like, you have died.
Yeah,
yeah. Go back to the beginning.
It's chapter 11.
Yeah.
Welcome to This Is Only a Test. It's just.
Oh, I said it's good. You made a chapter 11 joke as well. It's good. So I didn't want to let that go by.
So now we have three options because we could talk about Kodak.
Oh. That's
too soon.
Let's do Best Buy.
So Forbes, there was an article in Forbes about Best Buy dying the death of a thousand cuts, basically.
Yeah.
And you were the one who brought this up. I was going to skip it, so I'll let you do
it. It got posted a lot. I've seen it around the internet a lot this week. I thought it was a pretty interesting article. Basically, an op-ed piece in Forbes. Talking about how Best Buy is basically moribund, how they are on the way out, and in a couple of years they'll probably be gone, and the contentious thing being that, and that is deservedly so, that the company's made a lot of poor decisions that are rendering them obsolete.
Well, they pushed hard into 3D and invested big in like Magnolia and that kind of stuff, where the high end TVs live, and then the TV expecting. I think a lot of companies did this. In fairness, I think a lot of companies looked at the massive growth in TV sales in the early to late 2000s, based on the shift from standard def to high def, and expected that to continue indefinitely. And it's not going to happen because people don't want to buy a $2,000 TV or $1,000 TV or $500 TV every 3 to 5 years.
True, and also they banked most of their profits on extended warranties and service.
Which people hate.
That's the thing people absolutely hate. And when I talk about service, I don't mean service in store. I mean after you buy a product service.
Like Geek Squad.
Geek Squad.
Yeah. So and they made big profit margins on that for a long time by massively overcharging for those services.
Yeah, and they've got no shame at all. I mean, the fact that they'll that you can go in there and look at a copy of Saints Row and say, hey, for $50, a Geek Squad professional will install this game for you. I mean,
Xbox copy of Saints Row. They clearly
have no shame at all.
Right.
About gouging customers.
But it was working.
They will still outright lie to you about why you need a $250 HDMI cable, which anybody who knows anything knows to be bullshit. Mm-hmm. But that's where their markups are. Their markups are on big ticket items like HDMI cables that don't need to be that expensive.
Well,
and warranties, they will also always try to sell.
And I've even had bad experiences with in-home install. Like when I moved into an apartment about six, 7 years ago, I bought a washer and dryer because I had a washer and dryer hookup for it. The Best Buy guy came in, rolled the washer and dryer into the place. They were, you know, the kind that you can make. They're either side by side or you can make them stacking, but you have to do some work to make them stacking.
Yeah.
So dude just lifts the dryer up, puts it on top of the washing machine without bolting them together or taking the lid off of the washing machine. It's like, okay, they're in, hooked up, ready to go. And then the fucking dryer fell off of the washing machine.
It's all anecdotal, but to be fair, when they delivered my TV, they did a fantastic job. Well, so they put it all together and set it all up, and they did a very professional job. But the Forbes article was making two specific cases recently. One was anecdotal, and one was kind of a bigger picture thing. So we saw the story recently that this guy was talking about Best Buy emailing all its customers that had reserved products and ordered products for Christmas.
Yeah.
At the last minute, basically saying, oops, we fucked up. We don't have enough inventory. Yeah. You're not getting the product you ordered. And now it's basically too late for you to probably go get it somewhere else.
Right.
So they fucked
Merry
over
Christmas.
They fucked over a lot of their customers. And what was really interesting, the guy made a good point, really kind of passing the language that was used in that press release about how Best Buy was not, you know, the customers were not going to get their products. It's very interesting the way that they use the language, making it about the customer, saying customers are not able to redeem their orders, as opposed to saying we are not able to fulfill them. Yes. To make it kind of sound like it's on the customer side rather than the company fucking up, which obviously is what actually happened.
That's a PR lesson. You know, when Union Carbide killed all those people in India, they didn't say we accidentally released toxic gas and killed a shitload of people. They said there was an accident.
It's very clever, subtle use of language to kind of make it sound like it's not really – yeah, they're not really, really at fault. But clearly they were. I think they angered a lot of customers. And then the other example the guy gave, which to be fair, again, is only anecdotal, but I think we've all had this situation. You wander into a Best Buy, you want something specific, and your customer experience is just a fucking nightmare.
Yes.
The employees don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
They're trained to not give you what you want, but to sell you what they want you to buy.
Right.
So this guy goes in there basically looking for a particular video game or something very simple, and you end up getting the hard sell on a cell phone plan or a 3D TV on something you have no interest in.
Right. Well, in fairness, I have had some very good experiences at Best Buy on occasion.
I have good experience. I still enjoy wandering in just to kind of browse. But if you're going in there with a specific thing in mind, like you said, like I want to find a Roku box or I want this particular product, you are going to run the gauntlet.
Because they know the majority of people go to Best Buy. Consumer electronics are different from games. Like GameStop, people go to GameStop, they don't go there to browse. They go there to pick up something they're pre-ordered.
Well,
they
some people go because it's Tuesday and they're like, hey, what came out this week?
But mostly they go there.
Consumers.
But I think most people are reading websites and are informed, going in there. And yet GameStop thrives. I think there's a huge opportunity in retail for consumer electronics. It's more than in gaming, consumer electronics, most people go in not knowing and actually want genuine help. And those people are exploited by the business practices of Best Buy.
This is the Saturn thing. You know, remember in the early 90s, Saturn launched and said, hey, we're going to just give you a price for the car. We're not going to do all the negotiation bullshit and all the haggling and all that. And it's going to be friendly so that normal people can buy stuff from us. And you don't feel like you're going to get fucked. And look how well that's worked out for them.
Well, they made bad cars,
I guess.
Let me ask you a question. If you're in Best – because this has happened to me in the past. If you're in a Best Buy browsing and right next to you there's a customer who's obviously very green. And
I always ask – answer.
Buying a – let me finish. That wasn't even what I was going to ask you.
Okay.
And he's talking to a blue shirt.
Okay.
And he's buying a TV and the blue shirt is saying to him, now, of course, you're going to want for the best picture – you're going to want the best HDMI cable. Now, this one here is $200, but it has special gold-plated genies in it that are going to give you the best picture. And the guy's going, oh, well, I guess I should get that then if you say so. I think that I have to step in and say, that's a load of bullshit. You can get a $5 HDMI cable. The picture will be just as good.
Yeah.
That's the biggest scam in technology right now. I know what I'm talking about. This guy just wants to sell you bullshit. I think you have to, I think my duty is... Is that none of my business?
No.
Or do you feel like you have a moral obligation to step in?
I usually size up the person.
Because I've heard of stories where that's happened and the Best Buy guy, because you just cost him a commission and they ask you to leave the store.
Yeah.
They don't want you in there. You're fucking up my shit, man.
I've done that before.
You've stuck your nose
somebody
in.
Somebody was trying to sell an iOmega external hard drive.
Okay.
Bad idea, right? You don't ever – it's not a – I need something secure to back up my pictures and videos of my kids.
Well,
this
nice-looking
lady was saying, you know, kind of a motherly 45-year-old woman.
Right.
And I said – and the guy said, well, this iOmega makes the best stuff. You know, you remember zip drives and went down the whole thing. And also you need the extended warranty on this.
Mm.
And so the guy walked away and I walked over to the lady and I was like, okay, look, here's the thing. The buy the good one. Don't buy the cheap one on because the things that you're putting on hard drives are more expensive than the data. Walked her through the whole deal,
right?
And said, "Here's the one that actually is rated really highly by people who review this stuff."
Oh, what a nice young man!
Right? No, she wasn't that. It was a 45-year-old.
See, it's one thing for you to interject once the salesman's walked away, but are you actually going to get in between a salesman and the customer and
objection?
Yes,
I've never seen a salesman call push the $45
like throw a flag down like a
what, Phoenix Wright it?
Like a soccer.
Red card
down.
Throw a flag.
Yeah, no, I've thought about doing that. At this point, the Best Buy people recognize me fair amount of the time, so I have trouble going.
Oh, that troublemaker!
Like, walk in and like, we got a code blue.
Right, code blue.
Yeah, it's like Vegas. They got eyes in the skies. Like they know you. Well, you're a marked man. Like they're watching you everywhere.
Hello, Mr. Smith.
You're not welcome.
Hello,
yeah,
Mr.
you could
Smith.
Be blacklisted. Yeah.
The worst thing about the Best Buy, not like the Costco, is the checking the receipt when you walk out of the store, making you feel like a criminal every time.
I was talking to.
I don't do that. I walk out without letting
you
check the receipt
because you didn't sign for a membership. Or anything.
Right.
Yeah. You not, paid
I'm,
for it.
I'm not talking about Costco. I'm talking about
Best
Buy.
Exactly.
I just blast right the fuck out.
You can it was interesting.
Out.
I was talking to Ben Mezrich recently, who wrote the book Bringing Down the House about the MIT graduates that went to
Fantastic
Vegas and counted cards and they had a brilliant system and they made a fortune.
Is this research for your trip, Gary?
No. I'm just mentioning someone about blacklisting because I happened to be talking to him and he was telling me the whole story about how he's blacklisted in Vegas.
Oh yeah,
they all got blacklisted, but he did as well because they taught. He knows all the same tricks. And I was saying, what's that actually like? He said there are certain casinos where you know they have all this facial recognition software. If I walk in, there will be somebody asking me to leave within 5 minutes.
Wow.
Can you go to like restaurants in the casinos or is it just the floor?
I don't know how they do it, but like, you know, their eye in the sky technology and the way that they've, you know, it's not just like pictures on a wall anymore. They have the cameras will map your face.
It's like Ocean's 13. And,
it's Minority Report.
Oh, yeah.
Right, remember like they're checking the breathing? Yeah. Oh, it's authentic. Her eyes are dilating. It's genuine excitement. No surprise there.
He says, I'm not. Yeah, he was telling the whole story. But yeah, I'll just be politely asked to leave, and then if you don't leave, or if you keep going to other casinos trying to get back, eventually you'll be taken back for a polite conversation.
Yeah. Oh boy, you don't want to go in the back room.
I've seen casino. Yeah.
Always walk away. Never go to the back room.
Yeah.
I was talking about Best Buy.
Hold on. Do you let them check the receipt when you walk out of Best Buy?
Well, they don't always ask, but
sometimes they wave off.
If they ask, then you know what's the harm? Here you go. Whatever. You're just doing your job.
I just walk out. I ask if they thought I would. Do you think I stole something? If you think I stole something, call the police.
God, you really are a nightmare. These people are just doing their jobs.
I'm sorry. It's shitty policy. It's not their fault.
It is really shitty policy.
Right. But I mean,
but Costco does it. All kinds of stuff.
I don't shop at Costco.
Costco is different because when you sign up for the membership,
you sign away your liberty.
Yeah, exactly. They can say, you know.
Yes, you are now a member of their club and you must obey by their rules.
You
got to
go for the strip search to make sure you didn't steal any jerky.
Yes. Yeah.
Let's talk about
Best Buy.
Go ahead.
What is the ideal consumer electronics retail experience? Why can't there be
fries? It's called fries.
Okay. Fries is terrible, though.
What?
I mean, fries is great if you know what you're doing. If you are an uninformed consumer and you just need to go buy a TV, Fries is the worst place in the world to
Why can't there be a store?
Fries is the best place for people like us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. It's like paradise.
Yeah, I love it. I love, on a personal note, I love fries. I would never send my father
fries. If you don't have a clue, the problem is there is no, the best, if you're a complete neophyte.
Yeah.
And you want to buy a big ticket item like a TV. Mm-hmm. The worst thing you can do is go to a place like a Best Buy and ask the guy
for
advice. Because he's not on that guy.
Oh, it's his dollar signs.
These guys, again, they're just, I'm not the enemy of these people. They're just earning a living, but they are not on your side. They are on the side of their employer and their own commissions. And it's not in their interest to steer you towards the best TV for you, but the best TV for them to sell you.
Right, of course.
And so you can't rely on these guys. And I've done it before. I've walked into I like to do it all the time. Yeah, you know, I'll ask questions.
I told the sales guy?
I know what the answer is, and I'm just waiting to see what kind of bullshit he's going to sell me. Because it's just interesting how they will lie to you.
Yeah.
So the best thing to do is, as always, you know, research online, look at impartial sources, go to places like Tested, look at the TV reviews online, look at the consumer reviews, make your decision, and then just go buy what you want.
Right. Yeah.
You should never walk into one of these places thinking, oh, this nice young man will help me. No, he won't. He's going to help himself.
Right. That's exactly it. I wonder if in the modern world where, you know, the thing we were talking about earlier where MP3 players all condensed to iPods and everything else, ebook readers condensed to Kindles and Nooks and maybe the Sony things, maybe, you know, as the product categories condense, is there room for a massive big box retailer anymore? I mean, you go to Best Buy to buy dishwashers and shit like that, but nobody's – I mean, I guess people go to Best Buy to buy Kindles because you can buy Kindles there and you can buy iPads there. Yeah. But, I mean, are you not going to get better served at an Apple store or on Amazon?
You're always going to get better served at an Apple store.
Well, I mean, I guess they're not on commission, so they don't have incentive to push.
Right, and they're not pushy at all. In fact, they're the opposite, because usually those stores are so busy you can't get anyone to come talk to you. But I've generally found them to be very – Apple guys are generally – the level of staff training is pretty, you know, good. They're pretty knowledgeable. Everything in the store is a big ticket item, so they've really got no interest. Yeah, you know, it's not like they're trying to steer you towards this or that. But again, I remember when we went on TV Quest. I mean, you remember some of the bullshit they were telling
us. Oh, yeah.
And they didn't know who they were dealing with. They were people that already knew our shit. But, oh, yeah, I mean, it's frightening. It annoys me when I overhear these conversations in Best Buy, when I can tell that they're telling them a load of shit to try to sell them something.
I want a big box retailer that just sells, just stocks the TVs that people in AVS Forum love at different price ranges and just has the services that I want, like, you know, really good professional color calibration.
Everything's awesome.
And doesn't sell any of the bullshit. And just sells monoprice cables.
So do you accept the basic premise of the article that Best Buy is probably on the way out?
People have been saying that since Circuit City went under. Yeah. I mean, it's been a thing. They've continued to grow. The thing that's happened is the stuff that people go there for now is media, where they have very low margins. So they don't make a lot of money on – well, they make a fair amount of money on Blu-rays because they're selling – Blu-rays that you can get on Amazon for $25, for $35 frequently. Although that's even slowed down. And they're price matching Amazon now, which I don't know how they're going
to
do.
It's for the impulse buy, for you to have it tonight.
Yeah, I want to watch a movie on Saturday.
They're price matching Amazon?
They're price matching Amazon.
Okay, that's good to know.
Yeah, I haven't actually tried that yet, but that's what I've read. People have told me that. I'd
still rather go to drive by a Best Buy on the way home, pick a Blu-ray, as opposed to ordering it on Amazon if I want to watch that night.
The other example that the guy gave anecdotally, but again, I've been through this myself, is that they have that store pickup on the website. Yeah. It's in store. We'll save it for you. It's actually better just to walk down there and like pick it off a shelf, because you have to go to the customer service line to get a reserved product, and you're in the same line with all the people that are having their computer repaired or returning a product. Why are you bringing it back? Oh, why is the box damaged? You're waiting behind. It takes longer to do it that way.
So for a while, they changed that. For a while, they had a special pickup line where if you were in the pickup line, you would bypass – like there was the customer service problem people.
Yeah.
And then there was the pickup line at the Best Buy.
No, you're all thrown in together.
And now it's back in the same thing, and that's the worst experience ever.
Yeah.
So
– at this point, the only reason I go to Best Buy is if I'm just – if I happen to be walking by, I wander in and browse. I enjoy looking at stuff. Or if there's something that I need right now today, and I don't want to wait for Amazon to deliver it.
So I bought my TV at Best Buy because the old TV died.
As did I.
And it was important. I've also bought a home appliances at Best Buy. It is a pretty good place to buy home appliances. It's still price match, and they deliver the same day frequently.
Yeah.
So if you
Home Depot is a fine place to buy home appliances.
Yeah. Home Depot charges a delivery fee, and they usually never deliver the same day. Say or Lowe's same difference. So if your refrigerator dies and you have a whole refrigerator full of food spoiling.
Here's a pro tip for Lowe's, Home Depot. If you go to the U.S. Post Office and you sign up, like if you move into a new place, you always get those 10% off coupons.
Ooh, that is a good call. Same thing for Bed Bath & Beyond.
Yeah.
Should we talk about Kodak, Chapter 11? Do we care about that?
Sure. Kodak's filed for Chapter 11. They have patent portfolio. It's a big mess.
Yeah. The one thing that's interesting that came out of this is that they apparently sat on their digital camera technology for a fairly significant period of time to protect the film business.
Now, where's the is that coming from the death of physical film or from smartphones eating into their camera sales, or is it just a bit of everything?
Probably death of the physical film because they didn't jump on to high-end digital camera technologies fast enough, and now that market's kind of saturated.
And there was a story recently about the last batch of Kodachrome film being made, right?
So that was last January, I think, wasn't it? Yeah.
So that's kind of over.
So that sucks. We love the Kodak ZI-8s. They're not the best cameras, but they did have features that still some of those point-and-shoot MP4 cameras
the cheapos,
never had line-in audio.
I mean, I can't think of a bigger bellwether for the changing face of photography than a giant like Kodak going down.
Well, you know, we've been talking about this last year. Actually earlier this week around the office. But if you look at – like there's big – anytime there's an inflection point in technology change, so the change from film to digital, the change from PCs to phones, the change from desktops to laptops, there have been inflection points and people have fallen by the wayside. So Dell is kind of waning. because they outsourced a lot of their manufacturing to Foxconn, which is ASUS essentially. And now ASUS has a massive business, and Dell is shrinking because of poor choices that Dell made in the early 2000s.
Evolve or die.
It's happening. It's going to happen again. You know, if you look at Apple, Google, and Amazon, which are arguably the three most relevant tech companies right now, mm-hmm. Google didn't exist in 2000 or barely. Amazon was what, 3 years old and selling books, and Apple was on the cusp of annihilation.
Right.
So, you know, anytime there's big technology shifts, crazy stuff happens, and Kodak is.
But this, I mean, it's amazing sometimes to me how much technology is like nature.
Yeah.
Things evolve.
Yeah.
And again, like you said, it's kind of, you know, Darwinian. You either adapt or you get left behind. And the world around Kodak has changed so much that they, in the form they've always existed in, has become largely irrelevant. So you either reinvent yourself or this happens.
Well, the thing I wondered is what would have happened had Kodak actually rolled out digital cameras and had a 4-year head start on everyone else that was in that market. In the mid-90s.
Didn't Kodak just make a really big play into like the digital cinema camera market?
Or was Canon.
That was Canon.
That's
okay.
Canon, yeah.
Because see, that's – and Canon is doing fine, right? So that was a company that has been there with PowerShot and digital photography early.
There's another shift with those guys because the DSL – like right now there's this big push toward mid-range mirrorless cameras replacing DSLRs in the low end.
Raw bears.
Yeah, and Canon and Nikon are staying out of it because I think they seem to be staying out of it. Maybe they won't. But they have a massive DSLR business, both companies. And
not only that, they have a massive point-and-shoot business.
Right, right.
So Ashton Kutcher commercials are not cheap.
Yeah.
Again, well, I think the low-end point-and-shoot – is still the mark, which is a huge sector, is still the one that is most under threat because those are the ones that are most comparable and most made redundant if you're carrying around an iPhone or any kind of good smartphone.
Yes, and yet Canon's doubling down with new point and shoots being announced at CES.
I don't understand that at all.
But what happens with those is those are for kids and the kind of camera you put in your purse, right? It's the kind of camera you carry around all the time if you don't have a smartphone.
But I think the smartphone is the new point and shoot. Smartphones are becoming more and more ubiquitous. I understand a super, super low end, practically, you know, just one step above disposable for kids and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And for like where, you know, you might be in a, you know, precarious situation, you want to, you know, risk your camera getting damaged or whatever, like a throwaway vibe. That's fine. But then I think smartphones basically become the new point and shoot.
And for two reasons.
And then there's still, like you said, the kind of the mid-range, the mirrorless cameras, and then the high-end DSLRs. There's always a place for them.
Yeah. Smartphones are new point and shoots because, one, they're with you at all times, and two, they're easy to share the photos.
That is a huge – again, that's the
huge. Well, and the location tagging too. Like all of that, all of the metadata that you get with a phone camera shot versus – like it's to the point now that when I take my real camera someplace, I shoot a smartphone picture at the same time and make sure that the time data is synced up on the camera.
But for kids, for most people, it's because it's in their pocket.
Text it, yeah.
It's in their pocket and you can text it, upload the Flickr or PhotoStream, whatever. Easy to share, much easier to point and shoot.
Yeah.
Mirrorless cameras, interchangeable lens cameras are new DSLRs because they're small and they're cheaper.
Right.
That's where cameras are moving toward.
I think the interesting thing about Canon and the point and shoots is that like they are in the same place that TVs are now. They've run out of features. They keep adding new features, but they're increasingly useless.
Yeah.
And there's no upgrade cycle for those. Well, so if you have a 12 megapixel point and shoot that takes good pictures and has nice glass, there's very little reason for you to upgrade that until it breaks.
What I would like to see, because I've been interested in that what's that Sony camera called?
NEX.
So the NEX, I like that camera a lot. Yeah. And even though I'm very happy with the camera in the 4S, I'm thinking that's a nice solution for something if you want something even better. But what it's missing right now, which the smartphone has, which I'd like to see integrated into this category, is some Wi-Fi and basic Twitter and Facebook integration. So you can still have the satisfaction of taking a picture and putting it out there right away, not waiting until you can get home and put your SD card in an iMac or whatever.
And right now, the only cameras that have the Wi-Fi stuff built in, it's, I think Samsung just announced one, but it's a point and shoot. And it's Wi-Fi built in.
Right.
The interesting thing to me is I think at some point there'll be point and shoots, and probably it'll probably happen in the mirrorless cameras first, where they actually add a Kindle style 3G connection where you can
piggyback on a carrier or a partnership.
Or just let me wirelessly connect my phone to it.
That's never gonna happen.
That's not. Unless Apple makes a camera.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, nobody...
I would like, you know, if I'm paying $600 for a camera that's got a big screen on it and all kinds of computer chips and shit,
yeah.
Why can't I just have an options screen where I can do a little bit of editing the same way I can on the phone and have little buttons for Twitter and Facebook and whatever else and just get it right up there?
Yeah.
They would make you pay a monthly service for that. $5, $10 a month.
Bullshit. Right.
They would do that.
That's the future, man. Paying $5 or $10 a month for everything.
Yeah.
What else? Do we want to talk about the Lumia stuff? About
every, yeah, sure. So
Lumia 900 is a good topic.
Yeah, I think that's a fantastic topic. So we've all been – we all like the Lumia 800. We've all handled
it. Love it.
It's a really nicely constructed phone.
Mm-hmm.
And we've all been saying that, you know, it's not being announced in the U.S., so probably Microsoft and Nokia are waiting for the next Windows phone, the next revision of that. Well, now we know what that might be. It's the Lumia 900, which it looks – just like the Lumia 800, except bigger.
So what's the opposite of eating an egg when you're wrong? Just the knowledge of that you were absolutely right about something?
It's like high-fiving with an egg in your hand. I don't know.
Oh, I don't have an egg. Yeah, I don't know. Okay. So this is what when the Lumia 800 didn't come out in the U.S., this is what we said was going to happen.
Yeah, I think you're right, though, by the way, that there should be – if you have to eat an egg when you're wrong, if you actually absolutely nail a prediction,
yeah.
You should get
– a churro.
You should get like a really nice cupcake to eat, like a treat. Yeah.
Like a win.
Something that you actually would enjoy.
I don't want to eat that many cupcakes as a reward. Sure,
yeah, that's true.
Well, no,
don't
again,
worry, Norm. You're okay.
I'm not.
I was going to say, the number of times that you're right, you're probably going to be fine. I wouldn't worry about it.
So this is a 4G phone. It's AT&T, right, is the rumor.
AT&T is the rumor. There have been leaked photos out right now. It's a 4.3-inch phone as opposed to a 3.7-inch phone.
The rumors show body style stuff at all or no?
It looks just like the new 800, except bigger. Very exciting.
And of course, ringing Windows
and 7. I genuinely mean that. I mean, yeah. Like for Windows Phone 7 fans, the idea is that it probably will launch with Mango and it probably will not have their mid-2012 budget phone OS.
Tango.
Yeah, Tango. And we're thinking about something later in the year, Apollo. Front-facing camera as well.
One of the interesting things about this is that the other rumor I'd heard is that Microsoft and Nokia are spending – well, that Microsoft is going to spend $200 million marketing Windows 7 this year, and Nokia is going to spend more than that on the AT&T phone alone to reintroduce the brand to the U.S. market. I find this very interesting, and I almost wish that instead of spending that much money marketing, they would devote that money to discounting data plans for users.
Sure.
Like if they gave cheap data plans with these phones.
But that's not a long-term solution.
They got to get the phones in hand.
This is a short-term solution. $200 million or whatever millions are spent on marketing, that's to get people invested in a platform. So if this phone is as great in person as it is on paper, now this would be a real time for us to really test to see if these tech journalists who fawned over the Lumia 800 can actually
stick by the words.
The 900? And switch to 900. I don't think it's going to happen. I think
you should do it.
I think
– I'll take your iPhone.
We said a lot of Apple lovers, us included, iPhone owners, like the idea of a really nice Windows 7 phone, but will not actually
switch. Isn't that sweet?
Yeah.
Isn't that adorable kind of way, way?
I will tell you, I was genuinely disturbed, upset to send the 800 back. I would have kept using that.
But the 900 is going to be so much better. Would you actually switch?
4G maybe. I mean, there's not going to be a 4G iPhone in that time frame.
That's true.
I've been giving this a lot of thought, and I don't think it is a patronizing attitude. I genuinely enjoy using the Windows phones. And again, some people have said if you live with it for a while, you'll start to see some of the annoyances.
Well, you know who has lived with it for a while? Ryan Davis.
And Ryan tweeted recently that he misses his iPhone. He said he's had an Android phone for a while and a Windows Phone 7 phone for a while, and he basically misses his iPhone.
Well, he hates Android.
Who is this?
Right. Ryan Davis.
Oh. Yeah, Ryan does not like Android at all.
In the same way, Ryan Davis, not Ryan Whitwam, who writes for us, who loves Android.
Yes.
Ryan Davis from Giant Bomb hates Android. Same reason that we think Android is still not ready for...
normals.
Sure.
Most normals.
Muggles.
Yeah.
Chuds.
Chuds, yeah.
Chuds is not the nice way to say that. I'm really interested to spend some my intention for the first part of this year, as soon as we can get a GSM Galaxy Nexus, I'm going to spend a fairly significant period of time with it and see how I think it works.
Wait, so maybe I blanked when we were talking about this earlier. Are we going to see a rollout of Windows Phone 7 devices at CES? Is there going to be more?
Yeah, HTC is going to have one. I think Nokia. I think
I only really care about the Nokia ones.
Yeah.
I think
I mean,
well, you never know.
Well, it remains to be seen, but those are the ones that I'm most interested in seeing because the Lumia 800 is such a beautiful device.
The fact that the 800 is the 900 will have a 4.3-inch screen and LTE makes it very, very attractive.
I think the Nokia stuff especially is pushing the other vendors to design better, to make.
Do you think
phones.
Do you think 2012 is a make or break year for whether or not Windows Phone 7 really makes a dent and carves out a slice of the pie for itself?
It's been out for over a year. Think about that.
I know, but to be fair, I kind of feel like the real story begins now with the Nokia partnership and the really compelling phones.
Well, with Mango is what I think the inflection is. Yeah.
I feel like everything up until now has been a soft launch, basically.
I think Microsoft cannot afford for Windows 7 to mature in a longer than 3-year run. It needs to mature faster than Android has.
Yeah, I think they want double digit market.
There are a lot of ways for them to do that.
By the end of this year.
And I think that's part of their Tango strategy for mid year.
I would love to see a reduced data plan, low monthly cost Windows Phone 7 phone, just to get that out in people's hands. I think
yeah, and it's actually a great. It would fit well into that low cost space because I think it is remarkably, more so than Android, remarkably easy to use. It's bright, it's colorful, it's like, you know, has that kind of my first smartphone vibe, but not like in a patronizing way.
So did the Kin. We'll see this year.
No, but that was a whole other deal.
We'll see this year if Microsoft one learned its lessons from the Kin, and two, if it has leveraging power to actually negotiate cheaper data plans.
Right.
We talked about this a little while ago. Broadcom has, released the first salvo of information about next gen Wi-Fi. So this is
now what's the letter they're putting on this one?
AC.
AC? I don't like that. Aren't they supposed to keep going up the alphabet? Like B, G, N? They should be like on Q now. Q sounds cool.
You know, it's interesting. This might be an interesting explainer. I don't know how these letters get assigned. I think it's an IEEE thing because I think it's all IEEE specs, but it may not be
monopoly on the E's.
Yeah,
we've been living with N for a while. And this feels like the time is right for the next step up.
Well, the thing about N is good for everything but wired replacement. You're not going to replace wires with N, but you'll extend your existing network.
You were making the point earlier that N is just as good for streaming media as a wired connection.
Should be, given barring interference problems and all that. The thing about N is you don't use it to deploy a office network. Like when we were building this office out, we ran wires to every desk because we knew we'd need wires. Same difference.
But for most people who have home Wi-Fi networks, N is plenty fast.
More than sufficient. And actually quite nice, quite a big advancement. The big advancement for N over G, the previous big spec, wasn't speed. It was actually range and reliability. So because of the way the MIMO stuff works, it's much more reliable at a larger range than G, A, or B ever were.
But that's where I think Wi-Fi is, as far as consumers are concerned, that next generation will be useful for like high volume media, like streaming data, streaming movies and TV shows in high def without having to worry about cables and stuff.
Now, there's separate things with Wi-Fi. I mean, there's the consumer space and there's the professional space. And I think we're okay with G and N, and it's great to see the next big thing. But we want to see Wi-Fi more broad, like across cities.
Well,
that range for that is still.
That's not what this is for, though.
I know that's what this is for. I'm saying that that's where I'm more excited about.
Well, the point of enhancing Wi-Fi when you don't need the bandwidth is to make sure that you're never the bottleneck. You know, when next gen fiber comes out to the people lucky enough to have fiber to their house right now, or the people who live in northern European countries that have really good internet because their countries are awesome and ours suck. Those people don't want their wireless network to be the bottleneck, and that's why this stuff has to keep.
There's no point
out.
Having this hugely amazing, robust fiber optic pipe coming into your house if it gets squeezed down to a soda straw inside your house.
Exactly,
right?
That's exactly it. So that's what this is for. Broadcom's announced the first few chipsets. That typically means that there'll be products within a year and a half or 2 years at the outside. So.
Will it be like it was with previous standards, like with N? Remember, it was like revision N, like they had the kind of prototype version before it was fully introduced.
I could be mistaken, but I think that there's much less contention this time with the AC spec than there is with N. I don't know for sure. I haven't heard anything about that at all. Okay. The fact that I haven't heard anything at all makes me think that there's probably no contention.
Because
last time there were basically two different contingents, each one with variations of the MIMO. The multiple input, multiple output. Is that input output? I don't know. Anyway, multi-antenna Wi-Fi.
Right.
And I think the Broadcom one is the one that ended up putting.
So when are we all going to? Doesn't matter. When are we all going to be shopping for new routers?
Probably when you get faster internet, or when you have a bigger house. I mean, the thing is, for the size house I have, N is great. It does everything I need. It covers the house really well. The speeds in the places where I need Wi-Fi are good, and I have wires where I don't.
So. And again, we're kind of in the higher end of this, like people that will make an extra effort to kind of get the best performance. Yeah. Like Norm's had his whole house wired. Yeah. I had a guy come in and run cable downstairs so that all the streaming media in the living room is wired. So I don't have to worry about that. Yeah. But for everything else, like just on your iPad or whatever, Wi-Fi is great.
And you know what? For the MacBook Air, you don't have wired as an option.
Exactly. You don't even have it.
Yeah. So, and also you don't have the opportunity to upgrade to AC without using a lame USB dongle that's going to hang out the side of your computer, and you're not going to want that.
Yes. Right. If you're wiring a house again, go with Cat 6. Don't
5e is fine, right. But 6 is the way
think
to go.
5e's, I thought 5e is fine, but like 35.
Did you do 5e?
I did 5e because 35-year-old Norm is going to regret that.
Yeah, I mean, the
cable's not that much more expensive. It's like 50 cents extra per foot or whatever it is. And, you know, you've just got the comfort of feeling a bit more future-proof.
Well, and you can use it
especially if you're running it inside walls and stuff where you can't just yank it and rerun it. You want to make sure that you've got you know, a bit of future-proofing.
And we are moving toward a world where Cat 6 and future, you know, Cat technologies are going to run not just data, but also your TV signals. And
right.
And
well, Cat 6, you can run HDMI over easily right now. So, wire is always good.
Yeah.
Other stuff on the list to talk about. Do you want to talk about the iOS multitasking controversy, Norm?
Yeah. So
that was a good post, by the
way. There was a Wes wrote the post up. This multitasking expert came out to talk about just claiming that there's been a lot of misconceptions about how multitasking works on iOS. And if you ask the typical layperson, you know, with an iPhone 5, how they manage their apps, many of them will say that they close their apps manually. They double tap the home button and hit the X button and close apps because those apps, they say, are using up memory and resources.
This is another example of misinformation spread by a poor retail experience.
And when we say poor retail experience, we actually mean the Apple Store.
I mean the Genius Bar. Yeah,
the Genius Bar have been telling people that, you know, to get better performance on your phone, to get longer battery life, to close the apps manually when that's actually not how
multitasking
works. And a lot of it's because it's called multitasking.
Yeah, it's a bad. We had extended conversations about this when iOS 4 came out, as I recall.
So
it's not really multitasking.
It's not. And the way iOS and the reason Apple said that they solved the multitasking problem on mobile is because apps on iOS have several states. It's not just they have several background states. They're not even just put on hold. They have several not running, inactive, active, background, and suspended states, all using various degrees of memory and processing power.
Right.
The long and short of it is that you really don't need to manage your apps. There are some poorly coded apps, and there are things that actually do run in the background, API-based things, and those things will
–
location services.
Music.
Yes. That will suck up power.
Yeah.
And it's smarter to worry about those. But for the most people, you know, multitasking – and a lot of people disagree. There was a whole long Reddit thread about, you know, how multitasking actually works. Don't get obsessive compulsive about your apps on iOS.
Yeah, the only time I ever really open that tray these days is if an app is acting weird and you want to close shut it down completely and restart it. Sometimes that's the only way to clear any glitches. And also just because I'm very OCD about neatness. Like if you look at my desktop at home, I see these. You see these desktops that are just like.
You're talking about my desktop.
Icons,
desktop.
Yeah.
Just plastered with random icons. Like that brings me out in hives just looking at that. My desktop at home has nothing. It has the computer icon and it has the recycle bin, trash can, whatever they call it.
Well, that's because you use dock.
And the dock makes it nice and neat. And so I'm similar. I also sometimes when you want to get access to other apps, do task switching. If with a million things open, you may have to swipe several pages to find it. Sometimes I'll just kill stuff just to have a neater tray, but not because I think it's eating the resources.
Right. See, I used to be like that, and I've intentionally moved away from that level of OCD because I found it was unhealthy for me.
My OCD is different. It's all about like, I don't want to acknowledge that these are the four apps I use most. I'm going to X them so I feel better about myself.
Wow, that's great.
Yes, but it actually is helpful though because when you want access to another app, Apple will put the most recently used ones up front so you don't have to page through a bunch of stuff to find it.
The tip-off that these are shortcuts to apps or app save states, not actually running apps, is that when you do a cold reset of the phone, all of the most recently used apps are still in the app tray. So, you know, there's no controversy here. The mistake is listening to the Genius Bar people instead of going to the developers' pages and reading how the actual app save states work. It is really, really straightforward. There are no secrets. Apple was unusually transparent about this, I thought. You know, occasionally there's bits of wisdom from the Genius Bar guys. Mm-hmm. A lot of times they're told what to say. You know, they toe the party line.
Yeah.
Like the thing about not restoring from one version of iOS to the other has solved most of my janky problems with iOS. But yeah, the save state, the closing things in the tray is ridiculous.
Yes. I mean, the insight is that those things in the tray are in suspended state and they still take technically memory, but that's memory always takes up power. No matter what, when power runs through it. So that's not actually taking up. And Apple iOS will manage that and move those to not running.
Yeah.
Very quickly. And also the apps, when you put them in save state, they will spend up to 10 minutes sucking up processing power to complete a large task.
Like, for example, like Instacast, when you have it downloading podcast and switch out of that, it will continue downloading podcast in the background, which is actually what I want it to do.
Yeah. By the way, and I like this, the suspended states and stuff are great. I was sitting around the other day bored, waiting for an appointment, and I thought, I'm so bored, I'm going to play Bejeweled. Bejeweled makes time go much, much faster, and also I know that the second I start Bejeweled, it's going to mean that the guy's going to come out and say, we're ready for you now.
Yeah,
so I'm like, you know. So I started it up, and I haven't played Bejeweled in months, and it said, oh, you're in the middle of a game, do you want to continue? I'm like, oh, yeah, I guess I was, like the last time I played Bejeweled, and I was able to continue right where I left off. It's great.
Yeah, it's very nice. I think that the one exception is stuff like GPS apps. If you leave – so I bought the TomTom app. I've been using that recently, just testing that stuff out.
Yeah.
And when you have those apps on, sometimes – especially TomTom, but even MotionX and some of the other ones are poorly behaved. And you'll – 2 days later, you'll be sitting in the car and all of a sudden they'll say, turn left in 300 feet.
So we're talking about location services and music.
Yeah. The only time I ever will go in and try and manually shut something down, if for whatever reason the location arrow is still on, A, because – I know that's got to be using power. Yeah. And also, I don't want my phone broadcasting my location all the time. It very rarely happens because, as we've said, iOS does a pretty good job of shutting down stuff it doesn't need.
Do you know the difference between the two different colors of the location service icon?
Yes. Purple means it's being used now. Gray means it was used recently.
And blue means it's being used but only in a backgroundy kind of way. No, a low power way.
Right. Like Path, for example, you can turn
just
this off.
Open up.
But Path will automatically broadcast your rough neighborhood location like every few hours, and so you'll see the arrow light up very briefly as it does that update. And you, again, you can turn that off.
Hey, you're in the waterfront in San Francisco.
I know. I'm thinking about turning that off because it's not that interesting.
Said it was lame and not interesting.
Thanks.
I want to put out my idea for Path.
Okay.
Is that so? For even though it's kind of silly, Path will let you tell. But and I'm still enjoying Path a lot, and you should get on it. It's good.
It's as good as your friends are.
Yes. That's true.
Thanks, man. I appreciate
it. So there you go. You make it what it is, Will. You can tell Path when you're going to sleep and when you wake up.
Yep.
All I ask is that if Path has the information of when I'm asleep, why not disable push notifications until I wake up?
Absolutely.
I went to bed the other night. I've got the phone on my nightstand. I set it to sleep. 5 minutes later, I'm like, oh, what is that bright light? My phone's on. Oh, Will has posted a photo at 11:45 p.m. I'm like, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh. I would understand if that was a problem for other notifications, like calendar stuff that Path has no access to. But for Path,
within Path.
No excuse.
I shouldn't even have to manually set disable push notifications this time and that time. If I tell you I'm asleep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a pretty good bet. I don't want your push notifications.
And also,
right
it covers
now.
It. You can't even
hold
access
them,
the rest
hold
of the
them,
app.
And I'll get it when I wake up.
When you tell it it's asleep, the thing pulls up. It's a very nice interface, you know, with the moon
like
and everything.
That,
and that's when I close, because that's why I leave my phone, the state on, when I put my phone on my nightstand. So when I turn it on in the morning, I click that I'm awake, and then
it puts Path into a non-usable state. So why are you still giving me pushes? It's annoying to me. I have to put my phone face down.
So when we were in Tennessee, non-standard charging apparatus, but you know, we had the normal thing where you had two iPhones and two iPads plugged in my childhood bedroom.
Yeah.
And one night they were all facing up. And of course, we were going to bed at like 9 o'clock, your time.
Right.
So you guys were posting stuff. And at one point, I think somebody must have posted something to Path that both Gina and I are friends – somebody who both Gina and I were friends with.
Yeah.
And literally – I was laying in bed, kind of not able to sleep, kind of looking at the ceiling, you know, and all four were face up, and all four got the push notification at the same time. So it was like blinding light in the dark bedroom.
Aww.
Right. I was a little creeped out, and then I realized what had happened.
I would actually like some kind of feature in the next iOS revision. Yeah. That would let me drill down a little bit more and not just turn push notifications on and off, but either set specific times. Like, I don't want push notifications between the hours of 9 p.m. and 7 a.m. or to have a very simple system-wide button like Path where I can just say, hey, I'm asleep now.
Nap time.
Don't give me any – hold my calls, hold my push notifications until
Like airplane mode.
You can put it in airplane mode, but also have the phone still be usable.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. That's like the number two feature I want from iOS. Number one feature on iOS I want is a guest mode.
Oh, that was an interesting post from Dave Weiner the other day. Did you read that?
I think it's something we've been talking about for years.
What do you want a guest mode for?
For iPad. He says it for iPhone, but I think for iPad more likely. When I'm iPad, it's very personalized. I
like
have
a whole
email.
Guest account like you can have on a computer?
Exactly. Okay. But the Dave Weiner thing was smart in the way he proposed it working is with the PIN code. So yeah. As opposed to, you know how Windows has logins, like a guest login, mm-hmm. right? Or you know, for browsing or anything. On iOS, if I type in my unlock PIN code, it goes to my home screen. If I type in a special unlock PIN code, it goes to the guest mode where it says can say guest mode on top, and then I get only the default apps. I get no access to my mail or my bookmarks in Safari or anything, and someone using my iPad.
Yeah, that's a good idea, especially since an iPad is something that's likely to get passed around.
Exactly. It's something people share. Yeah.
Yeah. It'd be good to stop tweet jacking and all that stuff.
Yeah, I think that's a great feature. I endorse it.
You would like that.
I just lost my left ear. The wire just died just now.
Oh, so you only hear it's out of your
than,
right ear?
Better than your left ear going deaf.
I guess so.
Yeah,
how
do you know you didn't go deaf in your left ear?
No, I'm good.
It's okay. Really red.
It is super red.
Yeah.
Let's see. We talked about tweet jacking. We talked about the Nook. Let's talk about Nook, actually, because Nook is an interesting topic. Barnes & Noble had a good Christmas for the Nook. Nook tablet sold well. Nook Simple Touch sold well.
Did they release numbers? Because it'd be interesting to get a snapshot. Amazon said they sold 4 million Kindles across the product range.
In December.
What did Barnes & Noble do with the Nook range?
I don't think they released numbers.
I bet you it wasn't anything like 4 million.
I doubt it. But they're thinking about spinning off the Nook.
What do you mean?
Separate. You know, remember Quixter?
Oh, great.
That.
Okay. So a whole separate
Barnes
company
and Noble
for the Nook?
Company, Nook company.
But obviously still interrelated.
I would assume so, but I don't know.
I think the Nook brand is
because, I mean, Nook would still need the Barnes & Noble content. That's the
store,
whole point.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think this is a good idea, but I don't have a real good reason for it. It just seems ill-advised for the Barnes & Noble brand.
Could be a business reason above our heads, accounting.
Numbers and suits and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Imagine a world, guys. Imagine a world.
Not a CS yet.
Imagine a world where your refrigerator and your washing machine can talk to your smartphone.
Not this again.
Imagine a world where thin IQ technology permeates all your appliances and your refrigerator will know that your avocados are about to go bad and send you a text message.
I was trying to explain this to someone the other day, the idea of smart fridges, and they kept asking questions like, well, how do they know when the milk is about to run out and the stuff that would actually be useful, like, we're so far from that being doable.
It's not making that useful is a significant challenge. LG's actually going to be showing more of that at CES.
Couldn't be
this year.
Less interested.
You can prepare to imagine even more worlds, guys. It's all I'm going to say. Thin IQ stuff is coming out soon. Apparently, they're actually going to make that refrigerator with the beer chiller and the Zigbee/Wi-Fi interconnectedness. So you can load more new laundry patterns, new wash cycles. You know, are you tired of the tyranny of your washer dial where you can't set, I want two rinses for my extra fluffy socks?
Last thing I want to do is min-max my laundry.
I do find the dial very...
You min-max everything.
I do find the dial very confusing.
I don't like doing period. Min-maxing is not going to make me like it more.
What is the difference between normal and permanent press?
Permanent press is for polyester, isn't it?
I have no fucking idea.
I just always use normal.
I use permanent press for drying because it doesn't ruin cotton as well. I think permanent press is...
This is probably all in the manual.
See, the other smart thing would be... This would be useful. A smart washer where I throw in a bunch of stuff. I don't have to tell you what's in it. Just detect... I am detecting cotton polyester mix. I will program this wash cycle. And
we need that
also,
voice.
Yeah, it has to be the robot voice.
You go to do your whites and it goes... There is a red sock in here. Watch out. That would be useful.
That would be useful. Right now, the smartest thing that my washer can do is detect the size of the load. And so that's how much water it uses.
Really?
Size of a load.
Yes.
I wasn't going to do that, but, you know.
That was good.
Before it starts, it actually spins a little bit, and it can figure out the distribution of weight, and it'll say, okay.
Yeah, why should I have to tell it how big my load is? It should be able to detect it.
Is this a Bono thing?
What?
A Bono thing?
Number two?
Bono?
Yeah, number two.
I don't know what you're talking about.
No. Oh, you didn't see that South Park. Okay.
I like that my washer dryer sings a song when I turn it on.
Do you have a Zojirushi washer and dryer?
No, I have a Lucky Gold Star.
Really?
Yeah, it sings a song. When I press it, it goes do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
Wow, mine doesn't do that. Yeah. I have a
it's wonderful.
I don't even know what kind of washer dryer I have. I think I have a Maytag. Good American brand.
Washing technology, I don't get it. I would like one of those really fancy ones with the digital controls and stuff. We have an old, you know, a dial, and you pull the dial out.
Oh, God.
No, you want to
just peasant.
Controls. Yeah.
Do you put the wash in from the top or the front?
Well, it's confusing. The washer is a top loader. The dryer is a front loader. So it's like you don't even have consistency.
Mine are a match set where they're both front load and the doors open.
Yeah.
So they when you open the doors, you can easily move loads from one to the other.
So they open like that.
Yeah.
That's
very smart design.
Well,
unless you fuck up and put them in the wrong way around.
No, but you do washer first, then dryer.
Right.
Well, you can do whichever, like mine, you can switch both. I guess you can't change the washer drawer. You can change the dryer door.
Whatever happened to the idea? I mean, you can get combined washer dryers, right? It's just one machine.
I think that was
a bad idea.
Yeah, they had those. It was like apartment living stuff. It was. They I don't think they ever worked very well.
Yeah,
because it's a lot of stuff for that to be doing. If you think about it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm. Talk about products you only buy every when they break.
I've never bought a washer dryer because I've always rented.
Oh.
And so, I mean, I not rent the machines, but rent the house that the washer dryer is provided.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah. But I do get envious when I go to the big box stores, when I go to Best Buy or Fry's or whatever, and you see those beautiful high tech front loading machines.
Imagine a world, gentlemen. Wait, I already did that one. Do you remember when US music sales? Do you remember when people used to buy CDs?
I used to buy CDs.
And then Napster came out and everybody stole music for a few years and the music industry was basically completely and totally fucked. And then something happened last year. Something magical.
What's that?
It was the first year music sales had increased since 2004.
Ah.
Was it just a particularly good year for music?
Adele, I don't know how you – that
Adele.
Adele. Yeah, not my kind of music. But,
not my kind of music either.
But apparently that album crossed generations and appealed to both teenagers and baby boomers, and a lot of music was sold digitally.
Do they have a breakdown on CD versus digital?
It was mostly digital.
People
mostly
don't sell
gains in
really
digital.
CDs anymore.
Yeah, the CDs are for grandparents now.
Yeah, when people give me a CD these days, I'm like, what the fuck am I supposed to do with this?
Yeah, thanks.
Here's the thing.
Sometimes they're special, though.
Music sales might be on the rise again, but with the rise of music streaming services, that's not going to be there for long.
Sure. Well, so part of it is that they have made more money on streaming services than they ever have in the past.
But that's not count towards sales.
It doesn't count towards sales. A couple of big albums seem to have pushed a lot of sales.
Well, and also you can make the argument in a more nebulous kind of indirect way, the rise and the improvement in streaming music services is helping people discover music they're more likely to go buy.
Yeah,
I think that's what the music streaming services would like the music industry to believe, but I don't know that that's the case.
Well, I know it was the case with Turntable. I probably spent $50 or $60 in music that I discovered on Turntable.
It's the case with services like Pandora and Turntable that rely on DMCA, not the case with services that make
– like RDO.
Like RDO and Spotify that have specific deals with labels.
Right.
That's absolutely true.
Right.
On-demand versus discovery.
Like even satellite radio where I can listen – where I'm more likely to be able to – I can turn – like I like kind of ambient, like electronic kind of chill type music. There's a couple of stations on Sirius that are just for that. I listen to Channel 53, which is their ambient station.
Okay.
And I've discovered – and again, it's easy because you just press the button and you can see what the song is. It will identify the song and the artist, or I'll Shazam it and I'll go buy that piece of music. I bought a bunch of music from satellite radio.
How do you feel about
that?
Wasn't there a Mannheim Steamroller channel
for Christmas?
For Christmas, yeah.
Yeah.
How do you – have you listened to – speaking of music, I was listening to the Bombcast where they were deliberating Game of the Year stuff and the arguments about the Bastion soundtrack were so interesting. I went and bought it. Have you listened to that?
I bought it. It's tremendous.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's a great soundtrack.
I'm sitting on the train reading, flying in the airplane, whatever. It is a fantastic soundtrack.
It's great. All game soundtracks should be that good.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a high
– Saints Row soundtrack is pretty good.
Yes,
yeah, but that's
is.
Real music. That's like music.
Yeah, I mean that's – well, no, there's some original music they composed. I mean the title theme is fantastic. Oh, but that's basically GTA.
Menu
just a
music.
Bunch of, yes.
It's all really good.
Great music.
I started listening to game soundtracks
last
year.
You know what's not
year.
Good music? What game Batman Arkham City does not have good game music.
No, it does
it's
not.
It's all ripoffs of all the various Batman themes from different Batman franchises.
Yeah. Oh, that's not cool.
Yeah, it's like, oh, this is such a Dark Knight wannabe. Or a, yeah.
Well, it doesn't have the Danny Elfman one that I've heard
it
yet.
It does have a wannabe Danny Elfman.
Bummer. Let's see. Down the list we go. Apple TV rumors. We hinted at this earlier. Johnny Ive, supposedly, in his studio.
Reportedly, some guy outside.
A knight of the British Empire.
He's a knight?
No, he's not a knight. I think he's a KBE or a CBE. He got something in the New Year's Honours.
Step back.
He's not a Sir Johnny Ive, but I think you got a KBE.
What is a KBE or a CBE?
It's like Knight Commander of the British Empire or Commander of the British. I can't remember now. There's all the.
He's still a knight.
Best thing about being British.
He hasn't been knighted, but he's going to get a medal and a nice. He'll be able to put like KBE or CBE or something like that after his name. I can't remember exactly which one he got.
When you get knighted, do you get a sword or anything, or is it just a title?
No, but you do get to go and kneel before the Queen, and she'll do the whole thing.
Or... Did you not see that movie where the guy cuts off his ear? The King.
King Ralph?
Was it King Ralph? John Goodman?
John Goodman is King Ralph.
Yes. Okay. King Ralph. Yes. That's what I was talking about.
Yes.
Yes.
I never saw that, but I'm
so. And anyway, that does actually happen. There's a special kneeling stool that you get down on, she gets the sword and does the whole business. Yeah.
You learn how to curtsy if you're a woman or bow if you're a man, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, I imagine there's a whole procedure that you go through to ensure that you conduct yourself appropriately.
Do you go to knighting school?
I think you have to.
Do you get to meet the Queen's corgis?
I imagine you would.
I would love to. Like, screw the igniting and the title and all that implies. I want to meet the Queen's dogs. I want to have Chloe go meet the Queen's dogs.
I imagine you would.
Oh, that would be fantastic.
You're American trash.
Right. My American trash.
You can get an honorary knighthood as an American.
That's true.
You won't be called Sir, right?
Yeah, I believe that's right.
God, that's the best thing.
Sir Norman Chan?
To be knighted is like the highest thing you can aspire.
I could be knighted. You're still a British subject.
And you're in the entertainment industry where sometimes people do get knighted.
For services to entertainment industry.
Right. You need to be very entertaining.
Yeah, you need to be very entertaining.
Helen Mirren was on Late Night with Jimmy Fallon the other night talking about being whatever the lady equivalent of being knighted as
Damed.
I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
You become Dame.
It was very interesting.
Yeah.
What else have we got here? We were talking about Apple TV rumors. Sir Johnny Ive.
I think he was actually
Johnny Ive, whatever he is.
The rumor is that in his private studio at his home, work studio, he has a 50-inch Apple TV.
All right, which basically the takeaway is that this suggests that Apple is actually making panels, not just a box.
Yeah. So does not necessarily mean that they're actually going to sell a TV because they make tons of prototypes. Yes. And Johnny Ive's studio at Apple campus has the most expensive prototyping equipment in the world, basically, to make anything he wants.
Right.
But the fact that if this is true and he has a 50-inch Apple TV at his home, lends credence to –
Are you suggesting that
– My prediction.
That he got a skin made for his Samsung TV that makes it look like an Apple TV? Jealous skin.
We don't know what this means, but it is just another chip on the pile of the side of an actual TV versus just an add-on box.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, the MHL. If they use an MHL adapter to add Apple TV functionality to a TV, so you can swap them in and out year after year as the hardware advances, I think that's not a bad thing. I don't think Apple's going to do that. It's not the way they work, and I don't think people are going to. I'm not going to talk about this anymore. But okay,
well, doesn't want to backtrack.
No, I just don't want we've this is well covered territory.
Yeah, we're two in the dark.
It'll happen when it happens.
It's not going to happen, but maybe it will. if Johnny Ive has a special TV,
it's not going to happen, but maybe it will.
The other thing that happened is USA Today reported that Apple is having a really hard time making content deals with content providers for Apple TV or iTV or whatever.
That's
whatever
the key. The key is the content.
Yeah. Without the content, they have nothing.
We'll see how pushy Tim Cook is.
And do either of you have a Roku? No. Either of you are Roku guys.
No.
Does HBO Go work on Xbox Live yet for Comcast users?
No, it's coming.
Okay.
February.
Yeah, I mean, if that's that kind of stuff is the key. That stuff has to all roll and work from day one. If it doesn't, then it's no go.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, we had some house guests and they were talking about they want to get a TV. They don't have a TV in the house right now, but they want to get one, but they don't want to get cable. So they said that. I said, well, there's all kinds of different ways you can get TV now. And I showed them the Apple TV box. I showed them what the Xbox system is like. And they were like, oh, this is really great. But there was, what was interesting was they had a very simple list of basically they wanted Netflix. They wanted Hulu. They wanted a couple of other, and they wanted a nice, simple, small box.
Yeah.
And nothing that I had actually did it. I said, well, if you had this, you could get this and this, but you wouldn't get that. If you got this box, you could get this and that, but you wouldn't get this. It's like there isn't one, you know, solution that does everything.
It's the worst flowchart ever. I mean, when I was stunned because I didn't realize it, but Roku doesn't have YouTube anymore. And like my Roku, my original Roku does have YouTube because I grandfathered in or whatever. But yeah, the one that I bought for my parents doesn't have YouTube, and I sent it back. I got it for them for Christmas. So I was like, okay, don't do this.
If Apple TV added
Apple TV,
like Hulu and HBO Go, I'd be golden. That'd be the only box I'd ever need to turn on.
Yeah, absolutely.
But again, so if I want to watch – I mean I can do it on the Xbox. But again, you got to power up the Xbox. It's a whole other thing. So they were saying, oh, so we should get this just the Xbox, right? I said, yeah, but it's twice as expensive as an Apple TV at least.
And
then you're paying $50 a year for 60. Gold on top of that.
Yeah.
So again, there's no simple solution.
Yeah, it's a grim situation right now. So.
And then they said, oh, but we also really like the NFL. I said, well, the only way you're really going to get that is Sunday Direct Ticket, TV. Which is only on PlayStation 3. Yeah. Again, it's just a mess.
Yeah. It's not good.
Yeah.
It's not good at all. Did we talk about the Windows Phone update yet? We talked about the Lumia rumors. There's a small Windows Phone update rolling out, starting, I think, with an LG phone. I can't remember.
Better privacy controls and
fixes the keyboard bugs, disappearing and location stuff.
Yep. Not that exciting.
The big deals there. The rumors are that Google and Samsung have sold 700,000 Galaxy Nexuses so far based on ICS adoption rates on sites that are like Android Market and stuff like that.
I'm not sure if that's a good number. Definitely not.
That's the rumor.
An excellent number.
Yeah, it's not Google approved. Yeah. So that is a lot of phones if that's true. It's also people running Cyanogen and stuff like that. So, you know, you take that as you will. The last thing on the list to talk about. Hold on. Two things. Lenovo ships the first Windows laptop with Thunderbolt, the Edge S430, I think. I don't. Somehow the screen ended up way back from where it normally is. Yeah, the Lenovo ThinkPad Edge S430. First thing with Thunderbolt. I don't think I care. Thunderbolt's kind of been a fizzle so far. And then the other thing is that the third week of Vita sales have decreased again. So they sold roughly 325,000 units the first week, 75,000 units the second week, and week three was 42,000 units. I don't think that's anything. I don't think that's a ill omen.
It's
I think
not, but people are already speculating that there might be another price drop.
But there's already been a price drop?
I mean, there will be a price drop.
Okay.
By the way, just this is breaking even as we're on the podcast. Just to go back to the content. Apparently, HBO is severing any ties with Netflix.
Really?
Yeah.
Did they have ties with Netflix before?
I don't know what they have, but whatever they have or whatever it is they may have been planning, apparently that is now off.
Hmm.
So
it's interesting you mentioned that because over the holiday I was worried about what I was going to watch on the plane ride home, and I went to iTunes when they had that HBO sale and bought pretty much the entire run of Curb, for $15 a season or something like that, which seemed like a pretty good deal.
Yeah,
and that kind of stuff is real good. Like that, I'm okay with that experience. I'm fine.
But again, why would you buy them if they're all there on HBO Go?
I don't have HBO Go on the plane.
Oh, you wanted something that you could watch.
I wanted something I could watch wherever I was, whether I had internet or not.
Right.
So, yeah.
I wish HBO Go had like Spotify where I can sync some episodes offline.
Yeah, good idea.
Steve Jobs action figure. It's the last thing on the list. I don't know anything about this.
I am very, very conflicted about this.
You like action figures and
I
like Steve Jobs.
Action figures. I kind of like Steve Jobs.
Okay.
It's not obviously not authorized by Apple, and Apple has taken legal action against this company. Has made a very
– Does Apple own the likeness of Steve Jobs?
I don't think so. Yeah. And I don't think there were any overt Apple logos – on this action
I imagine Steve Jobs' estate probably could.
Yes. I kind of want one.
I was surprised that it's actually very good quality.
Very good
likeness. I mean, it really looks like him.
Interchangeable
very
hands. You could have him hold a 1/6 size,
really?
1/6 size iPhone.
Well, that's why Apple's suing them.
They don't actually include the miniature iPhone.
You have to make it?
You have to make it or buy it somewhere else. Accessories. Or you can have the hand where he puts a thoughtful, hand to his chin.
Yeah.
Just is there sitting on a chair using an iPad?
There's no
pensive lean back.
It's not cheap. It's $100.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's expensive.
Yeah.
I don't know. So they're suing them. I don't know that there's a story here. Are you going to buy one?
Well, the story is I don't know whether I
– Oh, okay.
Okay, fine. My question is, if I got one, would it be in bad taste? Regardless of how much I want one.
I think it probably is in kind of bad taste. Not as bad taste as some of the inevitable like machinima type videos that this thing is going to be used to make.
Correct.
But we'll see.
I can't wait for it to pop up on Robot Chicken.
Yeah, it was a nice – I mean it's a funny thing, but you know, so what?
That was a subtle.
Yeah, good job.
Yeah, well, I was trying.
I was barely detectable.
I tapped the desk, and then you were talking. I thought you'd keep pushing on, but
no, I'm done.
But yeah, so I guess that does it for news this week. Let's roll over into what we've been testing, and then do some emails. Let me tell you, this left ear thing is driving me slowly insane. I might have to grab those other headphones because it's very difficult to concentrate on what we're doing here. But this is what we're testing. Norm, you have spent something we can't talk about.
Yeah, so there are two things testing recently. One is a Panasonic GF3. It's a mirrorless interchangeable lens camera. Actually, Micro Four Thirds camera. And Drew actually bought one. So people who watch our videos or quick looks know that I like the Sony NEX-C3 and actually bought it. Dave actually bought it. But Drew wanted something smaller for his trip. And so he got the Panasonic, the GF3. And we have a quick look of that on the site. I like the GF3. I think the images look really good. I think it's really fast. The lens that he has is excellent. It's kind of expensive.
It's kind of bad low light.
But because it's a Micro Four Thirds sensor, the sensor isn't as big as the APS-C size sensor in the NEX-C3. So the low light performance isn't as good.
Is that Sony sensor a backlit sensor as well, or is it the traditional CMOS design?
CMOS.
Okay. So joining us in the room right now, Matt Braga and Wesley Fenlon. You may remember Matt from previous episodes of the podcast, as well as Wes. Both of you guys are coming to CES with us.
We are coming to CES.
This is like...
Yeah, this is the CES team minus the video guys.
Minus video dudes.
Yeah, so yeah. Thomas, who some of you probably haven't met before, but Thomas is coming. Joey Famelli, of course, is revisiting CES from last year. And Drew Scanlon's joining the team this year. So we have three producers. The goal, of course, with this is to get more video on the site faster so we don't take 2 weeks to get everything posted like we did last year. Yep. And just have a whole shitload more video.
Yeah, because you'll be missing Anna, who did a great job last year.
Anna did a great job last year. Carpet Quest will continue in 2011, 2012. That's all.
We have
so
plenty
far.
Of surprises. So I guess this begins our CES preview, CES coverage preview of what you can expect next week, next week.
Starting on Sunday. At 7 a.m. on Sunday. Pacific time,
7 a.m. Sunday, drive stream will be commencing. Everyone in this room will be in a van.
And Drew. Yeah.
In our unmarked white van.
Yeah, we have candy.
Candy van.
Candy van. Free candy, no touching.
Rapist vans.
And we will be driving.
My friend Frank calls those Silence of the Vans.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. This is Frank O'Connor.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a funny guy.
10 hours down.
I'm already starting to regret this. Why didn't I just get a fucking flight?
I'm going to tell you the thing that we learned last year is that the drive down is really, really fun because you get to eat jerky and stop at truck stops and like see America, right?
Which the drive to Vegas is always fun because all things are possible. Everything lies ahead. The drive back is miserable because nothing is possible.
Yes.
No.
You're tired. You're broke.
Yes.
You know, all the things that have happened in Vegas.
Yeah.
So I've made the really wise choice here in choosing to fly back from Vegas.
Yeah, so that's what I wanted to do. But I couldn't I left it too late to get a good flight. Yeah. Although I can guarantee you here's the conversation that's going to be happening probably around Thursday.
I think Thursday Night Live show.
With me in the lobby of whatever hotel we're staying in Vegas, talking to the concierge, and the concierge is saying, sir, the only flight I can get you out of here is probably going to cost about $1,500. And I'm like, I don't give a fuck. Just get me on it.
Let me kill the blackjack table. I'll be back in 15 minutes.
Yeah, hold on. Yeah, let me go make that up.
And then you'll meet us at the bus on Friday morning.
Yeah.
The good news is on Friday, it's a much lighter crew coming back. So I think it's just currently scheduled to be Gary, Wes, Norm, and myself.
Yes. Okay.
So you guys will each have a couch in the back.
All right. So that's
that
so it's not as cramped
in.
As crowded.
Yeah. Bring a pillow, is what I'm saying.
Okay.
Or steal one from the hotel.
Not only will we have the drive stream on Sunday, we're also having a little bit of pre-CES coverage. We'll be showing you what type of equipment we're bringing to CES with bringing back what's in your bag. if you like those video series. At CES, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, every night we will be broadcasting our show.
Live.
Live. And it will be up on the site front and center the morning after. If you watch our show last year, it will be like that, but probably
a little tighter this year.
Tighter, nicer, yeah. Less of a mess.
We're going to have multiple cameras.
We'll have multiple cameras,
right.
Guests.
Maybe guests.
Special guests?
We don't want to announce – nothing to announce at this time.
Okay.
Yeah. We have no confirmations.
It seems like every year you got to have at least one wildly drunk guest.
Yeah, well, Christian did that last year.
Who will that be this year?
Yeah, who knows? Who knows?
No shortage of drunk – I'll just grab a drunk dude and, hey, you want to be on a podcast?
We're at the Planet Hollywood. There'll be plenty of drunk people.
Yeah.
So every night we'll post – as soon as we figure out what time that's going to be, we'll post it in the upcoming slot. So watch that block on the front page that says upcoming Untested. If you can't – if you're on the East Coast and can't stay up until we start at 10 Pacific, then it'll be up first thing in the morning as well as in podcast form. So
right.
That stuff will be – and that's, of course, free for everybody. We're not doing premium stuff during CES week. Although we might do a premium sad drive home. I don't know. I haven't decided yet.
How do you – now how do you stream out in the van?
Well, last year we used phones. This year I think I'm going to suggest – I got a power inverter. I'm going to try I think maybe a webcam and laptop with MiFi.
I know, but that's my question was like what's your data route out? Is it just the phone?
3G, yeah.
Okay. And you've got unlimited data, right?
So
you're
all good. Data.
Yeah.
Even if we have to hit – like last year I looked at my data for last year's drive stream because I did most of the streaming.
Yeah.
And it was only a gig, so I'm not too worried about it.
Right. For 10 hours?
For 10 hours.
Wow. 10 hours.
It's real low bit rate because it's like 10 frames a second. It's 230 by 480 or something like that.
And do you have a MiFi that you can
use?
Hi, Gary.
Well, we've got mine, but I don't want to blow all of my fucking data on the drive down.
We're going to get the Office one if Mike can get to Verizon and buy one. If not, we'll totally
cover
your entire January
whatever my overage is.
Go nuts.
Okay.
Go right. Wild.
Now, okay. Mind you, they're not going to –
because I think once
him.
You go over,
it's hard
cheap.
Times. Yeah. No, I understand.
But
yeah.
We might need to rely on that because last year the bigger problem was the reliability in the mountains.
Yeah.
AT&T, 3G, just
so we have
cut
a,
out.
We have a Verizon phone that we can use. We have our AT&T phones and we have
Oh, is this why you were asking about the GorillaPod? Because you want to like anchor exactly. The phone.
So,
okay, that's a good idea.
So I've gotten some accessories to make this work better. I've got a stick-on windshield mount for the phone.
Yeah.
I got some wide-angle and fisheye lenses for the phone.
Smart. And also we need a power strip so that everyone can plug in everything they need.
Well, we're not the way the inverters work, you can't do that. We'll have to take turns using the charger. But
okay.
I mean, that's fine. It works out.
Okay.
It all ends up being okay. And we have USB ports and stuff on the cigarette lighters and all that. So,
oh yeah, I'll bring some of my stuff for that as
well.
Yeah,
because I think there's cigarette lighters in the backs of these vans.
I've got a bunch of those. Yeah.
So does this mean we get to stop at every sort of like?
No, we don't stop anywhere.
You want to get there?
No.
I want to be able to get there and hit the tables right as we get there. You don't want to get there too late.
So the reason Joey isn't riding with us this time is that Joey he breaks the seal early.
Joey has a 4-minute bladder.
Yes. So
we love Joey. Just to be clear.
Keep yourself healthily hydrated, but don't overdo it.
No hydration.
Are you going to try and do a show the first night when you arrive?
We usually do a test show the first night.
Okay.
Sunday Night Live test show.
So also, we have big announcements. We have merch announcements that'll happen on Sunday during the drive stream.
Nice.
Yes, I'm very excited about these
merch
announcements.
Announcements merch. With an S.
Yes.
Yes, multiple pieces of merch, some deals perhaps, maybe some old favorites coming back, maybe some new stuff that you've never seen before.
And then we also have possibly a long-term project to announce the Sunday as well.
Oh, this is the doing something stupid?
Doing something incredibly stupid.
Incredibly
is this
stupid.
The thing that...
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you finally come around to this? Because Norm was very excited about this.
We found a way to make it work.
Okay.
Life finds a way, Gary.
Yeah. So you'll want to be there for the drive stream and Sunday night if you're a fan of us. This will be, Matt, your second time...
In Vegas
for CES, your first year over 21. And Wes, your first time in Vegas, period?
My first time in Vegas.
My goodness.
Yeah.
We're going to have some fun with
these
that.
Guys have a lot of work to do, so don't corrupt
Can
them.
We go back to the Paris and set those blackjack tables where they come around and give you massages right at the table?
I remember that last year.
That was fantastic.
Yeah, you got the double. You got a double massage.
I said,
two
go
people
again.
At once?
No, just one person. Oh. But I was like, as soon as she was done, I was like, just go again. And like, wow. I was holding up the table because the people were waiting for me to like hit or stick. And I'm sitting there just going, this massage is so good.
Such a bad idea.
Yeah.
Do you pay for that, or is that like a tip thing after you're done?
They come around with like a pillow thing, like a wedge that you can just lean into at the table.
Oh, gross.
And then for like $20, whatever, you get like a 15-minute, you know, massage. She gets in there with the elbows and the whole business. Oh, it felt so good.
Does the pillow have some sort of like hygienic cover on it or something, or you just get in there face sweat with everybody else?
It's all good.
Okay,
that's Vegas. Your concern.
Yeah.
I don't want to mash drool. I don't want to share drool with some random.
I'm going to be doing that. I'm going to be making more use of the spa facilities and, you know, trying to have a run, because I'm not, as you know, I don't go to CES during the day. My days are free, I'm either going to be fully nocturnal and sleep during the day, or my day is going to be like a spa type experience.
No pretense of even going to Vegas to see technology.
I don't think you don't have a badge.
No, you guys will tell me all about it. I have your coverage for that.
Do you have a badge?
No.
This year? Yeah. Okay. Go to the Encore. Book a spa trip to the Encore.
The Encore is good.
The Encore spa. Gina and I were there earlier this year. Is fucking unbelievable.
Okay.
And if you get an opportunity to go to the, I can't remember what it's called. I'll ask Gina and tell you later. But the spa there was, and you want to? They have a good pre spa, the steam room, sauna.
Oh, I love all that.
Japanese hot tub.
Oh yeah.
Cold plunge.
Yeah.
Normal hot pool. Another cold plunge.
Yeah. Well, I hear the one at the Cosmo is also very good, which is right across the street from us. We need to go there anyway, because you got to get into that buffet.
We should book that just for like Thursday night.
Best buffet I've ever been to.
The Cosmo buffet.
Yeah.
We're going to the Lotus of Siam.
Yes.
Yes.
For Thai food.
Oh, can we go to a really good steakhouse as well and get a steak? I've been dying for a good steak.
We can go strip houses in
Planet
Hollywood.
Well, there's one
Hollywood.
In Planet Hollywood, which is actually quite good. Yeah, let's go there. All right.
Yeah.
And lots of gambling.
The problem is
blackjack.
We got to go late at night because we're booked. We got limited, you know. These live shows, they take a long time.
Yeah.
We got no sleep.
Well, I always – the one of the things I like about going to Vegas CES week is there's generally lots of people there that I know.
Yeah.
So even though I'm there in an unofficial capacity
– it's like a high school reunion.
Yeah. So once you guys get your show – but once you guys get your show packed up, you guys are good for the late shift, getting out in the town, hitting some tables.
Yeah. I want to share a table, blackjack table with Walt Mossberg. It's my goal this year.
Okay. Does he gamble?
I don't know. I remember bumping in the line.
We waited at cab line once. Yeah. That was awkward. We stood right behind him and Norm was like, I think that's Walt Mossberg. I said, it's absolutely Walt Mossberg. And then he kind of did the over the shoulder, you know, one of those.
Why don't you just go up and introduce yourself?
Well, this was a long time ago.
Okay.
Let's see. Before done with CES stuff, do we have anything else to talk about at CES? We'll have a ton of video every day, on the floor reports, the live stuff at the night.
Yeah.
Expect
all of you to be broken by the end of the week.
Prepare to sleep 3 hours a night. We're going to go – Norm and I are going to go to Costco when we pick up the van on Saturday and buy cases of Red Bull
and stimulants. There will be no pushing through this.
Okay.
No, that was a mistake.
No pushing through. I was so miserable.
He has to drive. He has to help drive on the way back.
I have to help drive.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So last year, the last night, we decided to stay up all night, even though we had hotel rooms.
We thought it was smart to not sleep at all than just to sleep for a few hours.
Because we were leave at 4, 8, 5 a.m.
Yeah, we left at 5 a.m.
A few hours sleep is always better than none at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I went to bed at 3 and felt pretty good.
Plus, I had a good week at the tables all week until that last night when I just went on tilt.
Well, the thing
miserable.
To do this year is if on Wednesday night you're strong, you're good, stop gambling. Just go eat the rest of the time.
That's not how Vegas works.
That's
though.
Not how it works.
Poor low impulse control does not allow you to do that.
You are gambling right up until the last minute because you realize you don't know when you're going to be back. This could be the last hand of blackjack I get to play for a while. Come on, let's go all in.
Yeah.
Next thing you know.
Yeah, I don't think that's the terminology, but.
we have to spend at least part of the drive talking gambling.
Yeah, because you don't know anything about this, being
nothing,
affable and Canadian.
Nothing.
Well, you can sit at the tables with us and we'll talk you through it. It's all good.
You can hang around and get free drinks.
Well, I mean, the crazy thing is that I've been able to gamble in Canada for 3 years now. I just haven't.
Okay.
So.
That's good.
Yeah.
So are you planning to actually, like, put down some money at the tables?
I will put down some money, but I will not put down Gary money because I heard. You scared me last year.
What are you talking about?
Into the room and you said, you know, we're going to go to play poker. And it was like some like $20, $30 hands or something.
No. I was playing small poker, but I like to play for, you know, decent stakes at the blackjack table.
Yeah, right.
And Norm's there with me. Although Norm is a 1%er. Yeah, I'm surprised that he doesn't get picked up at the airport, you know, by the fucking
gold
casino
limo.
Concierge. And taking directly to the high roller suite.
I wouldn't put on my seatbelt.
Wow.
I don't know about that, man. Okay, CES stuff aside, Matt, you got to test something kind of cool a couple weeks ago.
Yes.
Remember the Sony 3D visor from last year? It kind of looked like a Daft Punk helmet. A little bit.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you had one.
Yeah, they finally released the thing in November. Much to my surprise, I thought it was never going to go past the prototype stage. The way I keep describing it to people is if you were in like your mid-30s and a bachelor and have oodles of disposable income, buy this thing. Because it's like $800 of just excess.
So is it for watching porn on the bus? Is that what the thing is?
No, man. Oh, geez.
Get up on the mic, man.
Am I too far off? It's great for watching porn on the bus if you want to bring your PS3 with you. Gross. And a purse.
What? What's your porn on a bus?
Well, I mean, every time you see these 3D visors,
that's
like
the use case.
Why does anybody need this thing? Okay, so you tried PS3 stuff with it pretty much, right?
To be fair, I mean, this makes a little more sense to me because it's 3D. So it's a visor. It has, you know, two little sort of screens inside of it. OLED screens that are magnified to make it look like you are in a movie theater. The effect is kind of convincing. And then it's 3D. So you hook it up to a PS3 or to a Blu-ray player. I don't know if you can use it with non-Sony devices, to be completely honest.
Well, it's HDMI 1.4a, right?
I guess. Okay. I don't remember offhand. I got to check. But okay. I just know that like it's a little box. You plug your PS3 into the box and your visor into the box.
And you need power to the box
You need power to the box, which was a bit of a hassle.
It's an enormous cable snarl, right?
Yeah, it's a total cable snarl. I was really bummed out that you couldn't just plug an HDMI cable into the back of the PS3.
Yeah.
That said, it was really fucking cool. I mean, at $800, it's totally, you know.
How heavy was it?
Sort of the big sort of caveat with this thing is that,
That's the big one?
Well, no, I mean, like, honestly, it's really bad because you can't use it for more than like half an hour because the 3D, the 3D effect starts to hurt.
Okay.
And then your head starts to hurt because either you can shift all of the weight onto your nose, which hurts, or you can shift all the weight onto the back of your head by doing weird things with the strap, which just gives you a headache.
And you wear glasses normally. So were you wearing your glasses underneath, or did you zip focus?
I tried it with both. I tried it with glasses and without glasses. It was better with glasses because I felt like it distributed the weight across my face better as opposed to all on my nose.
Okay.
That was, you know, that people with glasses, we win for once.
Yeah.
We
It's
totally
always better
win.
To have glasses.
Yeah. It's totally better.
Sorry, Wes.
But yeah, otherwise, you know, pretty fucking cool. Because I mean, last time when we saw it, they were just demoing videos.
Yeah,
you know, like there was nothing interactive. Whereas this, got to play.
I mean, it's good that these products exist because this product is how you get to the smaller, better one down the road. But like, you wouldn't recommend anyone actually buy this thing.
No. I mean, yeah, it's again, if you have disposable income and you're walking into the store and you've got nothing better to spend your money on,
Norm.
Sure.
How much is this thing? $800.
$800.
Woo!
Yeah. It's pricey.
You can get a really nice HDTV for $800.
Well, especially because Sony's selling their PlayStation TV.
40 inches.
A Vizio. You probably get like a 50-inch Vizio for $800.
That's
quite
true.
Yeah.
And did you try games with it too?
Yeah. Wipeout. Actually, I keep telling people Wipeout is probably the coolest bit of 3D.
Games seems
used.
Like it would be cool.
Oh, geez.
I'm so jealous because like Matt and I have talked about Wipeout HD. It's one of my all-time favorite series. Mm. And that game just looks mind-blowing.
Yeah.
The technology and the art style especially is just super clean.
Yep.
And if anything was just made for 3D,
it's appropriate for that.
It's Wipeout.
Well, especially because, I mean, it's I keep saying Wipeout is the best, like, tech demo slash game ever because in 3D, it was the only 3D game that I played that ran at 1080p. Batman and
it's 1080p, 24 hertz, right?
I actually need to try that. I haven't loaded up Wipeout on my PlayStation since they did the 3D update. I should give it a try.
Yeah.
A lot of fun. Yeah, that's the thing, though, is generally when you run – like, there's a noticeable frame rate hit in some of these games. Like, Assassin's Creed kind of chugged along at times.
Well, any of the big single-player games that are 30 hertz games were slow in my experience.
Yeah. So that's probably the only thing I miss about playing Wipeout in the visor is that, you know, Wipeout is a 60 frames per second locked game when you play it non-3D, but it kind of dips a little. When you like it's 30 frames and then sometimes it goes a little bit below that and you can tell but otherwise I mean it's you know
and over. This year we will get Adam Boyles to in our suite. Remember last year
we're getting what
Adam Boyles.
Oh, is he coming?
Remember last year we didn't.
Well, because Braga didn't know who he was.
Yeah, he didn't know who he was, and then we couldn't get
him off
the,
twice
the suite number, and he was looking for us. Yeah.
If I encounter any really interesting cats while I'm there, I'll see if I can press game them.
Meet some interesting people at the tables.
Yeah.
And hotel elevators.
I could find myself sitting there, you know, next to Bill Gates at the blackjack table.
I'll
say, hey, you want to come and do a podcast?
We'll play some bridge.
Yeah. Tell him we have a lot of really Tell him we have a 4,000 piece Lego thing in the building that needs to be assembled. He loves puzzles.
Yeah.
Bill Gates. Anything else you've been testing? Gary, you've been testing some photo apps, right?
Yeah. So I've been just in general, I've been getting more into taking photos with my camera through Instagram, and, you know, Path has a really great photo component that has Instagram type filter elements as well.
Okay.
So I've been taking a lot of pictures, and I discovered actually Veronica Belmont turned me onto this app called PicStitch, which I highly recommend. It's a free app.
Okay.
And it's just very cool. It just lets you basically, if I've got like three or four photographs, mm-hmm. it lets me put them in little nicely organized frames and create one picture.
Like
that's
a collage?
Like, well, you know how you see like a picture frame that has like multiple pictures organized within it? Mm-hmm. It's like that.
Okay.
So you can create, let me see if I don't know if
I've got any. And are the frames like predefined, or can you arrange them however you want?
There are multiple multiple templates, and then you can play around even within that.
Oh, that's cool. What's it called?
It's called PicStitch.
It's not free.
It is free.
It is.
It's 99 cents if you want to buy the ad-free version in-app.
Oh, okay. That's worth 99 cents if you use that.
I think so. And so, hold on, I'll show you an example, and, you know, we can always put it up on the thing later of the kind of images it creates. But it is very cool. Do I have it on here? Maybe I don't.
It's okay. Anything else?
So PicStitch is very nice. I recommend that one. The other one that I'm like, this was actually free the other day. I'm not sure if it is anymore, but they had a 1-day sale on it called Snapseed.
Oh, I love Snapseed.
Which is kind of like a mini Photoshop.
It was one of our iPad apps of the year.
Yeah, you can do more, but the phone version is very good as well. You can do, you know, very simple, or
the
actually
crop
quite,
and color adjust and all
And tilt shifting and, you know, again, filtering and more cool stuff. And another one I haven't tried yet, but that comes recommended, is this thing called Postal Picks.
Okay.
Which basically just lets you take the in-app, take the photographs that you've taken on your phone, and order up, you know, glossy prints to be delivered to you of those pictures right away.
You know what I want is a service that lets me send postcards to people with pictures I've taken on my phone. So when I'm traveling someplace and I want to send a postcard home, I take the picture, send it to the service, and write a little note on the back, and it just emails a postcard for me.
Yeah, that's called cards.
Yeah, that's the Apple thing.
But no, I don't want letterpress bullshit. I want a postcard.
I think they actually have stuff that is kind of like what you're talking about. There's multiple options for cards.
Wow. But can you do your own? I guess you can do your own pictures with cards.
Yes, that's the whole point. I sent my parents a personalized Christmas card from cards this year. I'll show you the
we'll send Christmas cards with Chloe bananas on them.
Did you get my Christmas card?
Yeah.
Oh. I did. I got you a Christmas card.
See, I don't know anyone who's actually used this yet, so I'm actually really interested.
I downloaded it when we were looking at Christmas cards because we usually do quick prints or I can't remember, but it's
some American thing.
Yeah, something probably not available in Canada. Well, you guys still do cards by hand.
There are all kinds of templates here for travel postcards.
Yeah, but that has frames. I want just
that option is also there.
Okay. Okay, sounds
good. Gary, I want to talk about your watch.
Yeah, let's do that.
That's something I've been testing.
Yeah. Now, Norm had a earlier, I guess last year. Was it last year or the year before?
Year before.
When the Square iPod Nanos came out. That was
Big Live Show 1.
Wow, really? Was that long ago?
September.
Of September 7th, 2010.
Wait, wow.
Yes.
Were you here? For, no, you weren't here.
No, I wasn't.
Is that the one where
that was before you even worked for the site, wasn't it?
Is that the one where you...
No, I've been writing since... Just early August, so but not long at all.
That's the one where you distinguished yourself, right?
No, the lockpicking incident was this year.
No, the previous one.
What did I do the previous year? Oh, the
just general drunkenness.
I'm going to go ahead and say once again, I didn't eat at all that day. I went outside after the live show was done and made some poor decisions. I had a whiskey and beer simultaneously multiple times and went from zero to pretty shit face.
But that is the moment at which you became a star in your own right within Whiskey Media. I don't think you were really, you know, you were kind of a second tier celebrity at that point. At that moment, you became an A-list star.
I like
in the Whiskey Media firmament.
I like to think that the thing that boosted Norm and gave Norm and I our meteoric rise was the As Seen on TV segments. So the sauna suits and the Baconator.
Yes, and that was definitely all part of your ascent. But right. I'm saying that your performance at the live show was that was your Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show.
Thanks.
Yes,
thanks, Gary.
Absolutely.
Yes, absolutely.
We had a good time at the KFC afterwards reading the gaffe comments.
Yes, we did.
I didn't go to the KFC.
No,
you were too drunk, dude.
All I remember is that sometime during that show, somebody came and said, oh my God, San Bruno's blown up.
Oh, that was the night that we had the big PG&E explosion.
The big gas
explosion. Yeah.
And then Chloe was there.
Right. Gina came and got you.
Yeah. That was probably best.
So that was also the day that I declared that the iPod Nano sucked as a watch.
Yes, because you had taped it to your wrist.
I taped scotch tape to my wrist before
any of these
fancy bands were released.
Right.
Kickstarter projects and whatnot.
Thought leaders once again.
Scotch taped it to my wrist and used it for a day and a half. And I said, nay, this is not a good product.
So 18 months later,
Apple has changed the firmware.
Yeah.
Updated it to make it more watch friendly.
Yes.
And now there are tons of these watch bands.
They sell them at the Apple store.
The second generation of this form factor, the square iPod Nano.
Yeah.
Apple obviously saw that people were interested in the idea of turning it into a watch. They said, okay, we'll help you out.
Well,
here's a bunch of interesting watch faces and some other changes that make it function better as a watch.
Yeah.
It's not there yet, and we can get into that. But yeah, so now you go into the Apple store. I hadn't been done this in a while, but you went to the Apple store and you're looking at the different iPad cases and stuff, iPod cases, and there's a whole category now for watch bands. There's multiple ones available. It's a whole new category.
So as a thought leader, you've jumped on this trend a year and a half after established it as lame.
Well, what happened was a buddy of mine who had a first generation Nano that got recalled.
Okay.
Apple, I thought this was quite cool. Replaced everyone's Nanos with brand new sixth generation Nanos from the earlier ones that record. So people got a nice upgrade for free.
Hold on, so if they had
one of the earlier, I can't remember which generation it was, but there was an earlier generation iPod Nano that got recalled for a battery issue.
It's the original white one, right?
One of the old ones.
One of the really early
ones.
Gina
uses when she runs.
If you sent that into Apple for a recall, what you got back was a 6G.
Which is pretty sweet. Nice. Yeah.
So my buddy Q posted a picture of, oh my God, I got a nice upgrade. Next thing you know, he's gone and bought a watch strap, and he posted a picture, hey, it looks pretty good as a watch. I'm like, oh, I didn't really know you could even get these proper watch straps.
Yeah.
So then I'll give it a try. So I went and got a Nano, and I got a watch strap for it. And I got kind of a shitty one that was available in the store, but I've got a nice one coming tomorrow that's like a proper metallic link watch strap.
Well, this leather one's not, is it leather or is it
No,
faux
it's
leather?
Kind of bullshit. It looks all right. I really, this was just kind of a placeholder until I got the metallic one that I like.
But you could see yourself not only changing watch faces, because that's easy to do on the Nano. You swipe to change watch face, but also having like a drawer full of Nano watch
faces. So I got the silver one because that's the one that's kind of the most neutral color that could go with anything. So they've got like antique leather ones. I got a metallic link one. There's all kinds of sports bands, all kinds of stuff you can get for jogging and what have you. But you know what? I kind of like it. So it's not perfect. So the watch face doesn't stay on all the time.
Right.
Because of the battery issue.
Right.
And there isn't even any user-controlled features for like how long it stays on. It stays on for a default 15 seconds.
So you press a button?
You do this. You press your power button.
Okay.
And there's your watch face.
Okay.
And it will stay on for a bit.
Yeah.
And also from here, you can swipe to get your stopwatch or your timer.
And you can go to Kermit the Frog or something.
So you can cycle through the different watch faces here.
Okay.
So
that's pretty cool.
There's Mickey Mouse. He's pretty cool.
Is it the arms? Yeah, of course. Okay, that's good.
So that's pretty nice. And then, what I would like to do is be able to set, because I'm not really going to use it for like playing music or doing very much else other than, there are some really cool watch faces on here. And again, depending on the band that you choose, if you pick like an antique leather band, you can pick like a nice analog watch face to go with it. If you have like a sports band, you pick like a cool digital face to go with it.
There is a word for this.
What's that?
That word.
Something
Chronos. Skeumorphic?
Yeah.
Skeumorphic. Okay.
A lot of people don't like that, but I think in a case like this, it actually works quite well. The simple thing I would ask them to do, because I understand why it's not reasonable to keep the watch on all the time, is tap to wake. You know, if I can just tap the screen like
that's going to hurt your battery too.
Why?
Because the touchscreen has to have energy to work.
Yeah, but it's easier keeping the digitizer like activated than it is keeping the screen activated.
Oh, no doubt. So. Absolutely.
But, so I have to do that, which again is basically like when I was like 10, the first digital watch I ever had that came out like in the late 70s, you know, the battery didn't exist at the time to keep the watch face on all the time.
Or the light, not even a backlight. We're talking about an actual small light on the side.
Yeah.
You press the button and it lit up the side.
Yeah. So look, I mean, it's a bit gimmicky. I don't know. I don't wear jewelry or other affectations, but I am I'm a sucker for a nice wristwatch.
Yeah.
So I'm giving this a try. We'll see how it works.
I'm going to ask you a question. Do you feel that digital watches are a pretty neat idea?
What are you doing? A Douglas Adams thing on me?
I was going to. That was the plan.
Yeah.
Thanks for ruining it though. do you think this is a good idea? Would you recommend this? For normals?
I don't know if I would recommend it because there's a lot of minuses, right? You can't just do that.
Yeah.
Right? Which is the convenience of a wristwatch. It's a two-handed operation for me to turn that on.
And not at all casual.
And there's a very brief delay, like a quarter second delay for the watch face to come on.
Yeah.
You're gonna be charging it more often than a regular watch. Having said that,
It is also a fully functioning iPod.
So
the headphone cable is still exposed.
It's here.
And you can get wristbands
that will cover that or come with a little plug that will fit it over. It's very clever. So this is actually, you do the thing where you multi-touch the screen sideways because this is actually on my wrist sideways.
Okay.
With the dock connector here and the buttons on top. So you turn it sideways so it can function.
So then you can charge it without having to take out the band.
This clips in and out of the band very, very easily, which is nice. It's very easy to put it on other.
Is it comfortable? Is the clip on the back of it grinding into your wrist?
No, not at all. The wristband is not a great wristband.
Right, of course.
So that's why you want to get like a nice leather one or a proper one that's fitted to your wrist.
Yeah.
But there's no, I mean, it feels like wearing just, you know, no more cumbersome than wearing any wristwatch, really.
Would not feel comfortable walking down the mission with that.
Why not?
You'd get laughed out of there.
Dirty
really?
Hipster.
Yeah.
Hipsters. I thought they would love it in the mission.
They'll love it in 5 years when no one has them anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have yet to see
anyone doing it. So I don't think it's become like a hipster thing.
Brian Chen wore one for a while, as I recall. I'd see him at events with his nano watch.
We're trying it. I'll probably wear it to CES because it feels, you know, venue appropriate.
Right. Yeah. let us know how
could
it goes.
Could be a conversation piece.
Right. They're not going to say, are you here for AVN? They're going to say, oh, you're here for
AVN's
CES.
Gone, dude. After, no AVN anymore.
Oh, it's bummer.
Anybody else have anything they've been testing they want to talk about? Bueller?
I had a couple of things on there, didn't I?
You had.
Oh, so I wanted to talk about Saints Row 3 just very briefly.
You want to save that for outtakes?
Oh, because I thought it fitted under what we've been testing.
How do you like Saints Row 3?
It's the best game of the year.
Really?
it's my personal game of the year for 2011. It's the most fun I've had playing any game in ages. If you follow me on Twitter, I've been tweeting about it incessantly.
You've said all the same things that I said about 3 weeks ago.
It's so much fun.
Yeah.
And then the other thing, I finally, because it was the first game that was appropriate, I finally got to plug in my Xbox controller to my PC and have the whole lean back console experience with the PC. And let me tell you, you can tell the difference. When it's running on your big screen TV in 1080p with full ultra settings, it is like playing next generation console games today.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
And that game is the thing that you said last night is something I commented on earlier, and I think a lot of people said it is literally like every time in that game when they had a choice to do something that was less fun or more fun, every time they made it more fun regardless of what the ridiculousness was.
Yeah, my basic take on it was fun at any cost.
Yeah.
Fun is the number one priority, and if they have to bend the story or the rules of physics or logic, no matter what they have to do to contort or compromise or mess around with any other aspects of the game, so long as it's in service of what's fun for the player, that is their mission all along.
Have you finished it?
Oh, yeah. Well, no, I finished the story, but there's still many more activities and things to do.
Even the side quests and stuff like that, side missions, which are usually kind of a drag in those kinds of games, are pretty good.
The first 15 minutes of that game have more entertainment value than the entirety of most other games that came out this year.
Yeah, they don't meet out – like they immediately drop awesome, awesome weapons. The mission, each of the story missions is crazy in its own special way.
Combat isn't a drag.
And this whole
driving's not a drag.
And this whole gaming PC in the living room thing, I think we're slowly winning over more converts. Brad Shoemaker, got excited about it and now is doing it. And you came over right the other day and saw Modern Warfare running on. You were like, oh, I got to do this, right? This is what people want to be doing.
What are you doing for keyboard and mouse still? You have a USB cord running across the room?
When I got a wireless keyboard and mouse, which works pretty good. And what I found I could do is I was just sitting at the coffee table in front of the TV, but it's still a bit lean
on the floor.
No, like on an ottoman.
A peasant?
But it's still like a bit lean forward. Yeah, I want lean back.
Yeah.
And so what I discovered was the spare leaf from the dining room table, which is just like a thick plank of wood.
Yeah.
Fits perfectly over the arms of my recliner.
Okay.
And becomes my lap desk.
Wow.
And it works great.
Okay.
Yeah. That's good. It's kind of a Fakakta solution, but whatever, it works for me.
Maybe I'll bring a keyboard. I need a wireless keyboard and mouse. I think I've gotten rid of all mine, I can't recommend it enough. It's a lovely experience.
I love it. I mean, again, you can tell the difference in the resolution at 1080p, the higher settings, and of course, it's running on a pretty good PC, so it never really slows down. Oh, yeah. It looks like Xbox Plus.
Yeah.
It just looks great.
Yeah, it's a lovely experience.
Yeah.
I'm going to play some music, and then let's answer some questions. If you have a question for This Is Only a Test, the email address is podcast@tested.com. Keep it short, under a minute. 45 seconds is preferred, hometown trivia or would you rathers. And hey, I want to buy a laptop, or hey, I want to buy a camera, those questions are a little tedious sometimes. So we're going to prefer other questions. I'm going to play the first question right now.
Hello, Will, Norm, Gary, and anyone else who happens to be on the podcast this week. This is Ott Lindstrom, and I have a question about buying a new laptop. But first, some hometown trivia. Grand Teton National Park, a few miles outside of Jackson, Wyoming, translates from the French as Big Breast National Park, because the French explorer who first came across the Teton Mountain Range made the very astute and juvenile observation that the largest mountain does bear a striking resemblance to an oversized human mammary. On to my question. I am departing for college this September and am, obviously, planning on getting a new laptop to take with me. My question is this. Exactly how big of an upgrade will an Ivy Bridge chipset be over Sandy Bridge? That is, will it be worth it to hold out until summer for a more expensive Ivy Bridge machine, or should I simply go with a Sandy Bridge? Keep in mind that I am a gamer and would be buying something tailored to those needs. Thanks, guys. I love the podcast, and Fake Outtakes is probably the best segment out of all the casts I listen to. Keep on being awesome.
I always like it when people make the effort to like compose their question and they put on their radio voice. Yeah. You know, it's all very
professional. It was a serious business question. Yeah. Matt, what do you think?
Kind of an asshole.
Oh yeah, you don't have headphones.
No.
Sorry.
No.
Wow. So Matt did not hear that question. No.
Matt was just sitting here being bored the entire time.
Sandy Bridge,
sorry about that, Matt.
Sandy Bridge right now is totally fine if you're building a desktop. If it's laptop, wait for Ivy Bridge.
Yeah, that's what I would games. Say. It's, and Ivy Bridge will be out real soon. I would expect to see an update in April, even March, maybe if Apple gets a head start on everybody else like they have in the past.
He said he wanted to play games on his laptop.
That's not going to happen.
Yeah, for either way, like he should get a laptop that has a dedicated GPU if he really cares about playing games, because Ivy Bridge is not going to be good. I mean, it'll be better for games than Sandy Bridge, but not much. So neither one is going to satisfy you with integrated graphics.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to play if you're playing, you're not going to play Skyrim on Ivy Bridge in a way that's going to be acceptable to you. You may be able to play the things you'll be playing are things like older games, 2D stuff, Torchlight, stuff that's specifically designed to run on lower end
machines. Team Fortress is fine. Things like
that kind of stuff.
As far as mobile GPUs go these days, who's on top? Is it NVIDIA now?
I have no idea.
Okay, neither do I.
That's AMD just came out with pretty high-end stuff, right?
So high-end for desktop. I think it's I'm not exactly sure, but the Fusion stuff on mobile, I would bet more on AMD. I don't think NVIDIA cares about discrete GPU.
Yeah, the problem with all that stuff is that there are probably 35 different mobile GPU SKUs from each vendor. So it really depends. The trick is find the laptop you want and then figure out what GPU can get in there. If your primary goal is gaming, then you're going to get a laptop that you're not going to want to carry. So, you know, I think that the 7-pound laptop market is a little bit tedious these days. And I don't think those things are really laptops. I mean, no, you're not going to carry that giant monster machine around with you.
Granted, if you can find a 15-inch laptop that games well, that's pretty much the holy grail. So,
from my college experience, give up on trying to play anything modern on a laptop and just buy something super light if you have any intention of taking it to class.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Just, I mean, don't even bother trying to get something that weighs more than 5 pounds because it's going
to
suck.
For college, I mean, the other way to do it is to build a desktop that you can use that's relatively inexpensive and then buy a super cheap netbook that has good battery just for typing notes into and
well, Ultrabook at this point.
Netbooks
right?
are dead.
Well, Ultrabooks aren't super cheap.
We have killed them.
Well, Ultrabooks are $799.
I know, but I mean, I just think it's weird that you're giving the advice go buy a netbook today. It just seems like,
well, if somebody wants a machine to type shit into and do nothing else, a netbook is great.
I would rather get an iPad with a keyboard attachment.
Well, not to diverge too much. That's a $700 way to do that. $600 way to do that. Yes.
If you've ever tried taking notes on a netbook? It is fucking painful.
Okay. Yeah, netbooks are shit, dude.
I'm aware of that. College note taking. Another question.
Hello, Will, Norm, and Gary. Once again, this is Peyton from the middle of Amish country in Ohio. I'm in the market for a new pair of earbuds. The only problem is that I can't stand wearing earbuds with the silicone tips that you have to wedge into your ear. Since almost all earbuds are made in this style these days, I'm forced to use Apple's low-quality earbuds that don't have those. Are there any better alternative earbuds that don't have silicone tips? Also, a would-you-rather question. Would you rather live in a country where there are no law enforcement officers or an extreme overabundance of law enforcement officers? Thank you, and always be testing.
Matt, I'm going to lead off with you again. What do you think?
I actually heard that question.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it was the one about, so what, he doesn't like silicone earbuds?
He doesn't like silicone earbuds, yes.
He just wants, like, plastic ones.
That is correct.
I used to use a pair of Sonys that kind of looped around my ear. Uh-huh. That were actually really nice. I used them for running. They didn't fall off.
The outside the ear jobs are good.
Those ones are good because they do anchor it onto your ear.
Hook on. Yeah. The other thing is that once you get above about $100, then you buy a pair of earbuds, and then usually they come with a bunch of tips instead of just the silicone ones. So your Shures and Edmonics and Audio-Technicas and Audio-Technicas is not right. Ultimate Ears, the guys that Logitech bought, and those new the Bowers & Wilkins C5s that I like. All have multiple tips. And some of them, like the Shures, even have the orange foam like you use for earplugs that you can roll up and jam in your ears and they poof out. And they're much more comfortable than silicone, I think. So you have to spend a little bit more money. The good news is that all $40 earbuds are more or less the same and made by the same shitty OEMs and just rebadged. So
Skull candy.
Yeah, so you're not losing anything by you're actually getting a benefit by buying a more expensive pair of earbuds. They sound a lot better.
I'm not a big fan of earbuds. I would rather get those kind of like collapsible mini headphones. You know, like I got a good deal last Black Friday on some really good Sennheiser noise canceling ones, and they kind of collapse down into a way that's very easy to put in like a glasses case, but then they open up and it's not in ear because I don't like in ear, but they're little mini foam things that sit over your ears and work really well.
That's a fair point. Yeah.
Okay. That's still not as, you know, convenient as something you can just like really like coil up and just put in your pocket and almost no footprint at all.
The nice thing about the earbuds is I just jam them in my coat pocket and I have them wherever I go.
Yeah.
But they aren't particularly comfortable. And I actually hit the limit with those C5s over the holidays when I was wearing them. The day that we recorded the last podcast, actually, I was on the plane for 6 hours. So I wore them that whole time. And then I got home, put them back in because I didn't have a pair of headphones when we were doing the podcast. And by the end of that, my ears were chafed. Which is never happened before, and is pretty uncomfortable. But squishy foam tips is the key.
Hey, Tested Crew, this is Paul from North Andover, Massachusetts. This past Christmas, I received an iPhone 4S after using an Android for the past couple of years.
Hold on, we forgot his would you rather.
Yeah, I would rather live in a country that has too many cops than none at all, because too many cops is scary for various reasons, but it's not as scary as basically Escape from New York, which is what you're talking about if there's no law enforcement at all.
Is there Ernest Borgnine there?
Probably.
I like Ernest Borgnine. Is he even still alive?
Yeah.
Okay. Norm, how do you feel about Ernest Borgnine?
I don't know who that is.
Oh, my God.
You've seen Escape from New York, right?
Yes.
Cabby.
He's a taxi driver.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's one of the greatest character actors of the 20th century.
Indifferent. More cops.
I think more cops.
Yeah.
More cops, more Ernest Borgnine.
Yeah. More cops, Braga? Or less cops?
Oh, fewer. That's right.
You know, on the audio, can't see you nod.
More
cops. We're all lawful good people here, I guess. I don't know how I feel about that. I'm going to play the question again now.
Hey, Tested Crew. This is Paul from North Andover, Massachusetts. This past Christmas, I received an iPhone 4S after using an Android for the past couple of years. No longer having turn-by-turn direction on my phone is a bit of a disappointment. I used the feature a lot on the Android and found it quite useful. So I was wondering if you guys had a preferred app for the iPhone that could fill my needs here, preferably inexpensive, under $5, $10. Thanks, and keep on testing.
So I've been testing a bunch of these out lately, all from the I can never remember the TomTom app, which is I think $50 for the U.S. maps, and is essentially priced kind of like a really cheap GPS, a dedicated GPS, all the way down to like MotionX and those guys, which are more apt priced. I think MotionX is $10. I can't remember, maybe $8.99.
Yeah.
MotionX is okay. I know a lot of people really like it. TomTom, none of them are perfect, is the thing. Google Navigation is the best phone turn-by-turn app I've ever used. Like, the timing is really good on it. The voice stuff is really smart.
Yeah.
The maps are relatively reliable. Nothing comes close to that is the bad news.
I've been looking into this for a while as well, because I hate my crappy Garmin that I've got in my car. Yeah. It's very unreliable. And I've been wondering, you know, can I just find an app that would do this? And again, just have one less gadget to worry about. But I think I'm going to wait, because as we talked about before, I think there's a very good chance that Apple is going to have a solution with the next iOS.
I think it's one of the big holes that they have remaining in their platform.
Well, and we know that they've been spending a lot of money buying up mapping companies and traffic companies. It's clear that turn-by-turn navigation is one of the big advantages that Android has over iOS. Apple needs to address that. I think there's going to be a solution.
I think you're exactly right. But
obviously work with Siri and all the stuff they already have in there.
Oh man, Siri. That's the big problem. Is none of that stuff works with Siri right now, or voice controls in general. And it's kind of janky when it comes to like integration with music playback and stuff like that, which is all stuff you do in your car with your phone at the same time.
I'll add on yet another prediction from last year and say that's another one, is that iOS 6, one of the flagship features of iOS 6 will be turn-by-turn navigation.
I have a prediction for 2012 as well. My prediction is that Gary will be giving new predictions for 2012 into March.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I still have 9 months left to predict.
Of course. Maybe we should just have a new segment. It's called the Prediction Hour with Gary Whitta.
Why not?
Prediction of the Week.
Yeah.
So that's that. And if you have a question, as always, podcast@testy.com. Listen to it. Make sure it sounds good before you send it in. And we may or may not run it on the air. Thanks for sending questions for everybody who did. And sorry we didn't get to any we haven't done. We will be better about doing them in the future. I think we haven't done questions in a month probably, if I had to guess. So, and on that note, I guess that'll wrap it up for us today. For Norman Chan, Gary Whitta, Wesley Fenlon, and the always affable Matt Braga, thank you guys for coming by. We'll be back next week. Stay tuned for Fake Outtakes. I'm going to play some music.
Hi there. I didn't see you.
Test it. Norman Chan, do you have a pulse?
98 beats a minute.
That's right? Way too high.
I want to ask you, what's the gag on your T-shirt? I don't get that one.
It's a smart quote. It's the HTML tag for smart quote. It's not tag. It's the Unicode code for smart quotes.
What's smart quotes?
You know, instead of having the straight quotes,
it's right? The nice curvy ones.
The smart
posture. Okay, all right. I didn't know that.
Typography gag.
All right.
It's not very funny.
No, I mean even that one's too geeky for me.
Yeah. It's a. Norm's pantomiming over here. You've been very quiet and typey the last few minutes. What's going on, Mr. Chen?
Running the website.
Okay, that's good. It's important.
We're all in here.
Yeah. The whole if this building, if this room, if this isn't salt on the wall and it really is mold, we're all going to die. I think I had an idea for a contest while we were playing the close music. Before Anna left, she gave me the raw template for the close song. I think I'm just going to post that and let people submit new end songs.
Oh, that's a good idea.
So we can have a different one every week.
That's a great idea. People could drop in their own quotes.
Obviously they should probably.
Because I think it's now that you mention it, a bit wrong that I don't have one in there.
Well, you don't ever say anything, you know.
No, it's always a normal quote.
Yeah, why is it? No, that's not true. He says stuff as well.
Never says anything.
I'm never in there.
Well, never says
no. I said the dumb and stupid one.
Yeah,
the dumb and stupid one.
Sometimes you do stuff that's awesome. Sometimes you do stuff that's just dumb.
The reason
that you've got a bunch of good ones.
So Anna made these, and they're all from videos. That's why there's no Gary ones, because you're not in that many videos.
Oh, okay,
right.
But people could go into the podcast archives.
That is true.
It comes out of mostly app of the day, when the point where we're really delirious.
Yeah,
at an app, and it would shit just comes out of our mouth.
I think that's a good idea, though. You should have a contest for the best ones.
I don't know. We give away stickers or something.
You do a whole segment of the show where you play the best ones and. Ooh. Announce the winners.
You know, we shot an apple a day yesterday that has perfect quotes.
Which one?
I'm
not running the boring one.
The one with the water.
The one with the water?
The one that crashed multiple times.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, that will have so many quotes.
That has some real gems in it. Norm, you have something happened for you magical over the holiday.
What's that?
There's a meme generator for you now, Norm.
Is there?
Yeah.
Really?
It's the follow-up to my lockpicking successes.
Spoofs of memes are rarely good. Don't try to take attention away from your meme.
I'm just saying. It's out there.
Your meme is still the big daddy of them all. Meme.
Yes.
It's both a blessing and a curse, I suppose. what's going on? What do we want to talk about? We talked about Saints Row a little bit. I watched the first season of Curb in the last week. It's really, really funny. I'd never seen it before.
Did you watch the special
I couldn't find the special, the pre-pilot?
Yeah, it's on the season one DVD. I don't know if it's on online.
It might be separate on iTunes. I'll have to go track it down.
Maybe so. It's worth watching, though, because you can see like the genesis of the whole art form that he's doing there.
I am incredibly offended, by the way, that you guys would suggest that I'm Richard Lewis.
is that what we said?
Incredibly offended.
We tried to figure out who's the characters, and
Incredibly offended.
I mean, Richard Lewis is way too neurotic for you to really be him. I mean, he's a big fucking whiny baby.
Well, I know, it's not that. It's the bracelet one. Oh, fuck off, Jim. It's the bracelet thing with the blind guy and the – I would never go do the blind guy's furniture.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're all petty people.
Yeah. They're horrible.
Terrible. Horrible
awful people.
Yeah.
The only one that is even close to decent human being is Jeff Garland. He's
what? He's an habitual serial cheater on his wife.
Well, I haven't gotten to that part yet.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, but no. Did they change his wife halfway through the first season?
No,
oh,
no.
She just
it's always, it's always been the same one.
Okay. I don't know, man. Richard Lewis, you guys are assholes.
I got to admit, now that it's come back, I don't see it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know what we were thinking.
You were just filling holes. You were looking for characters.
Yeah,
it's easier to do the entourage.
I think you could be more of a Marty Funkhauser.
I haven't gotten to Funkhauser yet.
Okay.
Oh.
He hasn't made his first appearance. I did the Ted Danson one was good though.
Yeah.
Ted Danson playing Ted Danson the asshole is a good Ted Danson.
Ted Danson does a lot of good work on Curb Your Enthusiasm.
What else is going on, guys? What do we want to talk about?
No, I'm really tired.
Have you seen any movies? Anything good?
I didn't see anything I've liked lately.
I watched The Changeup finally.
Okay. Why would you watch that?
Why?
Isn't that the body switching movie?
Yeah, it's the body switching with
what? Of all what? Why would you even like say oh?
Not even worthy of being mentioned. Oh.
I watched Limitless.
Oh, is that any good?
Is that the one where he becomes
Limitless?
That's
the awesome pill.
Yes,
the awesome pill. The movie.
Okay. I still think that should have been called the awesome pill.
So
is that what the original?
No. Oh, okay. It's Bradley Cooper who plays a writer. It's based on a science fiction novel.
Yeah. It seems like a Philip K. Dick.
He's like a guy's down on his luck, and he takes this pill that unlocks the hidden potential in his brain.
The other 90% of his brain.
Yeah.
The moral of the movie is taking drugs is awesome.
Yes.
There are no consequences.
Oh, really?
Whatsoever.
Not even at the end?
At the end, he is awesome. At the end, he's awesome.
You expected like a Flowers for Algernon style, lesson at the end.
Exactly. Nope. No lesson. The lesson is
waiting for that Requiem for a Dream denouement that never comes.
You can overcome the drug and take control of it and make it work for you.
I would take an awesome pill. Yeah. I mean, not that I need to be more awesome.
Right. The joke was always, why not give me a pill that makes me the shitty version of Bradley Cooper? I'll take that. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even the shitty version is better than what we currently
exactly.
are.
Right. But a pill that activates 100% of your brain. I think they did parts of the movie pretty well. Like the world gets more vibrant. You notice more things.
It's on Netflix now. I want to check it out.
Yeah. Yeah.
And of course, and Power is constantly playing in your head.
Oh, yeah.
that's the first thing. That's what makes you awesome. Yeah.
Well,
in fact, you don't even need to take the pill. You just need to have Power on constant repeat in your headphones, and you'll just do awesome stuff all the time.
Mm-hmm. So Vinny's been cleaning out his desk here. Speak on the Power trip. Vinny was cleaning out his desk.
Not because
day.
He's leaving, because his desk's messy.
Right. Because his desk was messy. He cleaned out his desk, and he came over the other day and said, "Do you guys know what the hell this thing is?" And he had a smart media card. Do you remember smart media cards?
Yeah.
No. It was between Compact Flash, but before MMC and SD card. And it was a big, huge, like Compact Flash size, but real thin memory card.
It was, you think the profile of an SD card. So it's like a rectangular.
Bigger.
But it has
the notch
at the end. But make it bigger, scale it up, and then flatter.
Okay. And?
Very thin. And it held
32 megs.
32 megs.
So he brought it over. It's like, hey, do you know what this is, and do you have anything that can read it? And I said, oh yeah, I have
one. It's a smart media card. It doesn't exist anymore.
No, it's not. Smart media.
One
SD.
Is smart.
Yeah,
one
smart
is smart media.
Media
card. And two, yes, I do have a reader.
Yeah.
We'll just plug it into his monitor. One of those 15-in-1 readers.
Oh, yeah.
His Dell monitor.
Yeah.
And we looked up what was inside.
I was like, I've never had this before. I've never had one of these. So we looked at it, and we were looking at it, we were going through the songs, and of course nothing worked because the card has degraded over the last 15 years, 12 years, whatever it is. But the music was his Summer Jams list from 2001, pre 9/11, Vinnie Caravella, a completely different thing. I wondered, if I open this up and it has Power on it, it's going to be the greatest day of our life. What if Power is so amazing it can transcend time?
It went back through time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Onto obsolete media formats.
Yes, onto all your old media formats have. But so do you keep old flashcards and stuff like that? I'm sure I have some 64 meg compact flashcard someplace.
If I could send anything back through time, now that I'm thinking about it, I would send Power back to myself at age like 12.
Yeah.
And just imagine who I could be today.
Gary, Kanye.
I'd be president of the United States.
Yeah, Kanye Witta.
Yeah.
Donda.
Regardless of where you were born, you would be president of the United States.
I would have been so awesome in my pre-presidential political career that they would have passed that amendment that you don't have to be born in the United States to be president, just to clear the decks for me.
Yes.
And I would now be the president of the United States.
With cameos in Expendables.
There'd be birthers that were worried about you.
Yes.
Kanye's had a reverse meltdown on Twitter last few days.
I heard that he's been tweeting a lot lately.
He went on a tear, what, two nights ago? Last night?
Yeah.
That was amazing.
So before that, we found this thing, and I think you can attribute it to Reddit, although probably on the internet elsewhere. But if you read Kanye's tweets and add the Liz Lemon comma space before any of his tweets, he becomes Tracy Jordan.
Yes, very much so.
Yeah.
And it works.
It works every time.
Every time.
Although I only saw a couple of the ones that were – I didn't realize there was a whole flow, but I saw a few that were retweeted. I think he made a couple of points about the educational system that I thought were pretty sound.
Oh, that's the point. It was a reverse meltdown. It was a melt-up.
Right.
But it was all the stuff before that where he said that he wanted to start up a new creative agency and then literally listed every profession in existence and said he wanted them to work for him.
Yes. Well, the best part about it was that Kanye is having 1% guilt, it seems like. He said
he has time to give back.
Right. He said he hasn't bought any new jewelry or cars in two years, which is a lot for a rapper.
That is a lot of austerity for a rapper.
Yeah. I mean, that's like really? How would you – he's driving it. That means he's driving the same year car I am.
It's like you're the same person.
We're together. It was the Kanye West reverse meltdown I enjoyed. I thought it was good. I think it's
what I thought was interesting as well is just another footnote to the whole Kanye West thing is after he finished Saints Row, the credits are running. And it's really long credits because it goes through all the different music credits.
Like 35 studios.
And so the power is in the game. It's actually one of the best moments in the game when that music kicks in. And you know, all the song, like 20 different people wrote that song. And I'm like, okay, I guess that's how many people it takes to make a song that awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. No one man.
Yeah.
Gary.
No one man could write a song that good.
Yeah. It's a magical song. I've come around completely on that. That's one of my favorite albums.
It was the most recent one.
Well, it got overplayed. It got overplayed something fierce, but then I went back and listened to it over the holiday and it's a fucking great album.
Yeah.
Yeah, what else should we? Where are we going to go for lunch?
I don't know, but I am hungry.
I am extremely hungry.
Let's talk about the CES drive. We got to get snacks.
Yep.
You and I are going to pick up the car on Saturday, so you can be on the car.
This is not podcast material.
No. 7 o'clock in the morning. Yes. I'm going to be at Norm Manor.
Okay.
Anybody who's not ready is walking.
How are you picking me up?
I'm going to drive to your house after going to Norm Manor, and then we're going to drive to Drew's house, and then we're on the freeway.
Oh, fuck me. It's 7 a.m.
Well, it'd probably be 7:15 for you.
All right. And then that gives us an ETA in Vegas of like what?
It's like 8 to 10 hours, depending on traffic and whether we get lost like we did last year. I anticipate not getting lost because A, we have turn-by-turn nav this year.
Okay.
And B, I know where we got lost last year. I'm not going to let it happen this year.
So 6 p.m. at the latest in Vegas.
Am I going to regret this?
No.
No, it's a good – just
– Like, because I didn't watch the live stream last year. Like, what do you guys do?
Imagine mobile Oktoberfest without guests.
Oh.
We can call Jeff Green.
But that means that we can't even – like, so we don't even feel like we have the luxury to have like quiet time. Like we've got to be entertaining and on all the time.
No, you can go in the back. Time.
I like the people watching drive stream last year when it got really dark because when it's brightly lit, you watch the web stream. It's fine.
Yeah.
When it got really dark, you can't see anything. You just hear people kind of talking. People just tuning in thought it was – we're filming a porno because here like –
Oh, they thought you were the bang bus?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah, we pulled up to the Starbucks in Modesto and we're like, hey, you want to get in the bus? She's like, yeah, I do this all the time. It's Modesto. What else are you going to do? Porn and crystal meth. It's what Modesto's for.
Oh, my goodness.
Are we going to go through Death Valley?
No, you don't go through Death Valley. You go through the Mojave.
You do drive past the world's largest thermometer. Although you do when you're
really?
From L.A. Yeah.
No, we don't go that way, though.
When you go from L.A., you do.
We go through Tehachapi and the Mojave Desert. We drive by the Mojave Space
I've done it once. It's a fucking long drive.
It's
all right when you've got people with you.
If there's no snow, we might go the other way, which is supposed to be shorter.
Don't deviate from the path.
Did you just 80... say snow?
Yeah, snow.
Well, there's no snow.
If there's no snow over 80, we might go that
I'm gonna
way.
Bring,
like
I'll bring
shorter.
My Wi-Fi. I'm obviously going to bring all my gadgets.
Yeah.
I'm going to bring my DS. You should get a DS. Bring a DS as well.
I'm pumped about this potential DS gaming. I haven't played my DS in so long.
We should. Everyone should bring their DS. Probably. And I'll bring whatever games I have that are appropriate for multiple players, like Mario Kart and stuff.
Okay.
Tetris DS is fantastic multiplayer.
Yeah.
Does that one have the like it can beam out to other people and play off one?
Some do. I know Mario Kart does. I'm not sure how many players they go out to, but like any cartridge, if you've got your own cartridges, you should bring them.
Are you going to bring your 3DS to try to get some coins as you're walking through Vegas?
Just the DS.
Blink, 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 blink.
No, just the DS is fine. I'll take my 3DS to PAX in September.
Are we going to go to PAX Boston? We should talk about that offline.
No, my plan is definitely go to PAX.
Definitely September.
Well, oh, yes.
Sorry, I meant PAX Boston.
My situation by September is going to be all fucked up.
Oh, right. You have a different set of priorities.
But the plan is still nothing is fucked here, dude. Nothing is fucked.
You put it on the books now.
We're still going to PAX.
Yeah.
Yes, that's the plan.
We should talk about this. Congratulations are in order for one Gary Whitta and his special lady friend, Leah, whose last name I'm not going to put on the internet, although it's probably out there already. You have a special thing, something magical, something wonderful's happened.
Yeah, we're having a baby.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. Is this going to be like a Tom Selleck, a Steve Gutenberg, whoever the third person?
Well, that would require three men. I'm only one man.
Well, you know.
I guess I could rope you
just
two guys
to,
in, and we could be
the power
right.
all the time.
Yeah,
we would. Yeah,
that's it. You and, and Norm is Gutenberg, and you're Ted Danson, and I guess that means I'm.
That makes you.
Yeah.
You, wait, who's the third one?
I just
Gutenberg, Danson, and Tom Selleck.
Oh, I'm Tom Selleck.
No. As if that wasn't planned.
To be fair, he is the only one with facial hair.
I can make some mustache in 5 minutes.
Just by default, you get to be Tom Selleck.
Hell yes.
Oh my goodness.
Shit.
Men children.
Men children and a baby.
Men children.
Yes.
And
yes.
a baby.
Yes.
Yeah. This is a terrible idea. July 4th, born on the 4th of July.
Yeah, so the due date is July 4th, which doesn't mean it'll be born on that date, but that's the date they put on
that's
it based on. It's actually 14 weeks today.
Okay.
So into the second trimester, and there is a July 4th theoretical due date.
Okay, that's
so we're pretty excited about that.
Congratulations.
Yeah,
lots to look forward to.
If you want to open up a baby shit section of Tested, we can make that
happen. I mean, so I'm
and
sure
you can
there'll
get
be
a ton of free stuff.
Lots of baby monitors, cameras, Wi-Fi, shit, all kinds of
stuff. You can have a mommy blog.
I think you're going to be a much better geek dad than Wired's geek dad.
Yes, I agree.
We'll see.
I like Wired's Geek Dad, just to be clear.
I think Gary would be better.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm not looking forward to, the lack of sleep and
Hoobie diapers.
Me time pretty much going out the window. But
yeah, there's no me time.
I'm nothing but excited about it.
It's good that you've hit your physical peak now so that when you begin the gradual decline, you can look back.
I mean, that's the thing. You know, a lot of people say like, be prepared to put your life on hold. I'm like, what fucking life? Like, I don't have one to begin with. So it's not like, you can't go out anymore. And? Anymore?
Yeah, but the difference is when we see those pictures of your feet and the TV framing your feet framing the TV, there'll also be a baby there.
It's pretty sad. It's like people, I go on Instagram and people are posting pictures from like Costa Rica and El Salvador and Cambodia, and amazing places they're going to. My Instagram feed is just basically me in my chair watching different things on TV.
Yeah. Well, that's why that's why I'm like Path. That's why I was a little hesitant on Path, because I'm like, everybody else does, like Norm's always out doing things with people, human beings.
Yeah.
So we're just
I don't really have a path. A path is like, something that exists between points A and B. I only have A.
Yeah.
So there's
no. Well, this is point B.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
You do this once a week.
Yeah, occasionally. It gets me out of the house.
Yeah, I don't know.
So we're excited about that. And I'm very, thank you to everyone on Twitter and Facebook who extended their congratulations. And
Google Plus.
We went to one of those 3D imaging places. Because Leah had a
ultrasound.
Ultrasound. Earlier on, like a medical one. And, it was just a little blob back then. There's not really much to see that early.
Yeah.
But you always want to see new things. And we got to go hear the fetal heartbeat, which is really amazing. And it goes cool. like, bum, 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 bum. It's like,
like
150
fast, like a
beats a minute or something. It's crazy. But Leah is the worst person in the world for like, I would torment her, like put her birthday presents out early. And like the sight of like the wrapped present and not being able to open it and know what's in it would drive her crazy.
Okay.
So when this baby came along, I should have predicted this, is that she wanted to know. I said, why don't we, some people said, are you going to find out the sex? Why don't you wait until it's delivered? That can be kind of fun. And Leah's like, you got to be kidding me. Like the minute it's medically possible to know, I have to know. Because for her, she's like carrying around like the biggest wrapped gift in the universe that she wants to unwrap immediately. And so if we can like
it's a horrible picture.
So if we can ultrasound unwrap it as quickly as possible. So there's this place here in the Bay Area that does these 3D, 4D ultrasounds where they can determine the gender, the sex very, very early on.
Okay. Like, so it's like an upsell, a medical upsell?
Well, it's a completely elective, it's a vanity procedure. You go just to see it and to find out. There's no medical necessity for it.
Okay.
You go and you pay your money and they provide this service.
So if she had the Gattaca option,
What's the Gattaca option?
Like they take the DNA sample and then they can like do a 3D render and show you what they're going to look like as a grown up and how smart they're going to be and that they'll have like language affinities and science affinities.
Yeah.
She'd do that, right?
I don't know about that. That's interesting. You don't want to feel like
called eugenics,
the fate of it. We're actually, and strangely enough, right over the weekend, they were. I saw the Star Trek episode was on TV, Masterpiece Society, where that's what happens. At birth they can genetically type you for like this guy's future would be as an architect, or this guy would be a great
delivery
musician,
boy.
And they ensure that everyone reaches their best potential, and that's how they reach this ultimate version of their society. Because there's no wasted potential.
Okay.
But all we really wanted to know was find out the sex, and also for me. Like, I care less about that and more just like you. I'm very anxious, so I'm just like, I want it to be healthy and want to know that it's all right in there. And so anytime you can see a picture or hear a sound that indicates, yes, this thing is alive and doing the things that it's supposed to do, I was very happy to see
that. You were looking
for
it to sex.
What's that?
To sex, like internet, T-E-H.
Jeez. Norman Chan.
Bad.
I apologize.
I'm tired.
So you got to start playing Battlefield, man. So
the ultrasound was cool because it was the first time it went from being a blob to actually looking like you could specifically see like a head and limbs and fingers and toes, and it's about the size of a lime, so it's like, I don't know, that big.
Okay.
You know,
that's
which
pretty
is,
big.
Yeah. And it gets much bigger.
Yeah.
But so it was cool to go. I posted a couple of the 2D picture, and then the 3D pictures were really creepy because it really looks like an Area 51 type alien.
It looks like the alien thing from
really
aliens.
Creepy.
It's going to blast out of
there
stomach.
Almost weren't any 3D pictures that I was comfortable sharing. I found one that was like, okay, that looks basically humanoid.
Yeah.
But the 2D ones that you're familiar with, the kind of the staticky black and white pictures, those are still better, I think.
Okay.
In chat, Leah says that it looked like an alien gummy bear.
That's kind of what it looked like.
Awesome. So, well, congratulations.
So come July, I'm sure, you know, so by next October cast.
Yeah.
You know, that I'm
we'll
sure
have a new
be,
Gary.
Yeah. I'll be very, see, the good thing is I'll be absolutely used to having no sleep at that point. So I'll be able to handle Oktobercast, you know, hopefully a lot.
You did really well
easily.
Last year. I mean, it was interesting to me last year that the two older people held up better.
Norm, who's the one
youth.
Who was the young, virile, athletic
I
dude.
You that night and the weekend.
You were barely hanging on a couple of, I remember.
Mm-hmm.
But I was nodding off as well. I mean, we were all in fucking.
We got to get an October cast shape. In April. That's the
I still, away. I still don't know about this biannual
April
thing.
I had some more questions for you about forthcoming children. We'll save it for next time because we got to go get lunch. And then
yeah,
Battlefield 3 TNT later today.
Oh, that's the TNT today?
Yes,
yeah,
TNT
Norm's
today.
Playing.
Cool. I got to get a copy of that.
Until next time, thank you guys for listening. We'll be back every Thursday. And Sunday, drive time, 7 a.m. Pacific time. That's 10 a.m. Eastern time. We'll go until we get to Vegas.
Hey, should we get some Mad Libs?
I have
the book.
Star Wars ones.
Oh, you have a book of them, right?
I got a book
the book
Christmas.
That you had.
Oh, but yeah, that's all used up.
I got a book of Christmas of Star Wars Mad Libs.
Right, oh, perfect. That's what we'll do. We'll do Gina Star Wars Mad Libs.
We've got that. Live shows every night. Rebroadcast in the morning as soon as they're...
So Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then Friday we leave. Is that right?
Yeah, and so Drew and Joey and Thomas are going to fly back on Friday morning so that we can keep videos coming.
And when does the party van get back? Friday night?
Friday night. We're going to leave. As early as I can roust you guys up on Friday, we're going to drive back.
Don't
push through.
I'm still there on Friday morning and I haven't done the things that fuck you guys. I'm getting on a fucking plane.
That's totally going to happen.
I can't look at your stupid faces for 1 minute longer, which is a distinct possibility.
But
if that doesn't happen, no matter what I say, do
pact.
Not let me.
No all nighter.
Anytime. If I start saying about push through, just slap me.
Okay.
Slap me hard in
Norm's
the face.
Norm's not allowed to push through because he has to help drive. Right. I can't drive the whole way by myself.
You two are the only two that are on
by that
the
point,
rental
we'll be the
agreement
only two
to
that
drive,
driving.
Right?
I mean, we can add you if you want. That'll help.
I mean, I'm happy to help out, but I don't have to be there in person, though,
I
when
feel
you get
bad.
The vehicle?
You're doing enough for us already, Gary.
No, I'm happy. I enjoy driving. It gives me something to do.
Okay.
So I'm happy to help out. I just don't know if legally can I...
Well, we can put you on if we go to an Avis, and we have to drop people off at the airport, so we can do
put
that.
Put me on just so you've got the option.
Yeah. Well, you'll have to come with us, but we'll do it. We'll figure it out. Until next time, Sunday morning. We'll see you guys later.
All right. Bye-bye. What do you want to eat?
I want to eat food.
All the food. Let you
guys figure it out. Will, can you unplug me?
Wes, can you unplug him?
From where?
The power brick there.